welcome to Biggest Gigas. We are your hosts. I am Joe.
And I'm Randy.
This is episode 35 of our podcast, and the date is Wednesday, May 5th, 2021.
Cool.
Yeah. So, oh, that's what I was wanting to get going. Got to get
call-ins.
The call-in thing going.
Sweet. We got a few.
Honestly, I've been doing so much stuff, I can't remember.
Yeah, we got some a little bit of exciting news today. Don't break it yet to them, Joe. We'll do it slowly in the positive material plane.
We'll break it to them gently.
Gently, man, because that's how we are. We're gentle.
What's that? What's that Tenacious D one? Oh no, we probably
no, can't use that. Though it's hilarious. Yes. I do find them funny. Nothing like a little potty humor. Welcome to the potty.
Massages.
Ooh, massagery.
Let's see. All right.
So I survived the trip out of the state, dude. Just like our governor. I survived it. No COVID or nothing.
Right.
Look at that. It's a miracle. It's a literal miracle.
The biggest difference is you didn't make some stupid rule that you broke.
Oh, good point. I believe my rule was do whatever you want. Yeah. I don't care. But hey, what's our governor do? She got to put the thumb down because, you know, Ed Whitler.
Let's see here.
We got a bunch or just a few today?
You know, the bad thing about this is, one, when we initially got these, I listened to them.
Yes.
And then the background work I've been doing made me forget. Okay, so Pringles. Okay, I think I know where I'm starting at.
Okay, Joe is technolizing.
Okay, we had some from Taylor last time.
Yeah, I remember him. That's cool, dude.
And he talked about Jim Henson.
And he talked about how awesome we were, which was a great start to his first message.
Australia not being real.
Yeah.
Joe, okay, so
that was good. That was good. Sure. Yeah, that was cool. Way to go, Taylor.
Okay, so I'm going to start one after I share. Okay. And if it sounds familiar, let me know.
Okay. Because Taylor had two last time, so I think that you're...
I'm a little discombobulated.
Because that's part of the good news, man. Joe's been working hard. Tech master is what I'm talking about.
And I worked a little late today.
Yeah.
So I didn't get as much time up here beforehand as I would have liked.
All right. Bust it up. I see stuff.
All right,
Jason.
Hey, guys. Jason here. Just want to comment on the positive material plane. First off, Taylor, don't let him fool you. He doesn't have a podcast, but he has a blog. It's called Clerics Wear Ring Mail, and it's really good. It's a good old school blog, and I highly recommend you check it out. You can see links in my show notes on the times he calls in. As far as DC Universe Infinite, I think that's what it's called. Anyway, yeah, it's got comics back. Yeah, it's got not all the old comics, but it's got a ton of old comics going back. I'm sure it's got Action Comics 1. I'm driving in the car, so I can't look right now. But it's got tons of old stuff. I've been reading stuff from like the 70s, mainly stuff from the 70s right now. But it's got all kinds of old stuff in there.
Dude, DC Universe, man. Oh, Joe.
I know.
Jason
wants us to be poor.
He does. He wants me to spend all my money.
Oh, I've got a great idea.
Dude, and I'd heard before Taylor on the Czar of the OSR, Mr. Tenkar's Tavern chat. Mm-hmm. Heard him talk before. Yeah, he's a Clerics Wear Ring Mail. I got to check that out.
But I have a great idea. You can pay for both of our subscriptions on that.
Dude, that is utterly bullcrap. No, great idea. Maybe it'd be a Christmas present for you. You get a year for $60 or $50. I'd buy that.
70.
70? Okay.
Yeah. Well, what's $70 between pals?
That's right. Don't worry. I'm keeping track.
As far as VTTs go, I don't disagree with John as far as their useful using computers is, an aid for the GM to track a campaign. my problem with VTTs are when you have tokens on a map and you have interactive things like interactive character sheets and stuff, a lot of times I've experienced players fiddling more with the tokens and fiddling with adjusting this or playing with a character sheet, and they get absorbed into the visuals on the computer instead of the game. So they're busy moving their token around the map instead of listening to what you're saying. So that's my issue with VTTs. And it's obviously it's going to depend on the player. Now, as far as VTTs go and computer aid goes, there's something to be said, especially in the case of Rollmaster, which I'll talk about now.
Cool. So, yeah, I don't want to poop on John's idea. John plays, dude. That's the way he rolls, and he kind of has to. Yeah, I mean, I think John would be, John would be welcome at my table. I'd have a blast with that, dude.
And John moved to the States.
Absolutely now. You and Anna both.
Guaranteed table.
Face to face, yeah. State of Michigan, no worries. But I agree, though, with Jason a little bit because I don't know. Sometimes people are fiddling a little bit, but honestly, I'm just probably an old man. That's what it is.
Here's the thing. I've listened to a few other podcasts. I've cheated on you. And there seems to be an issue with a lot of people not being able to tolerate playing at the computer for more than a couple hours.
Right.
And I think that's kind of contributed to this thing that I've noticed with very short play time.
Right. And
I don't know if sitting at a table with your friends or whatever, sitting at a game table face to face, if they have the same issue.
Well, yeah,
but it's definitely at least three different people in different podcasts talk about that. Maybe more from call-ins.
No, I've heard that too. Another podcast, just so you know, I'm cheating on you too. So, it's good for the goose, baby. Anyway, so
no,
I fully agree. I think when I play, I told you before, 3 hours, I start getting, even if I'm playing, I played a D&D game for 3 months or so with my cousins in Tennessee, which is where I was at last week. Loved it. Volunteer state's pretty cool. Anyway, 3 hours is about it. And if I do computer stuff at work, you know, if you don't do computer stuff at work, it may not be so bad. I think John does computer type things. So maybe it's just your natural inclinations and limitations. You know, yeah. I can only stand so much screen staring. And you and I are talking about extending playtime. I don't know about you. I want to go more towards 6 hours, not four.
Right.
You know,
Right. And to me, I can tolerate screen time because I love being in front of a computer.
True.
I have to find a comfortable chair though.
Oh yeah.
I am lacking in the cushion department.
Dude, but when you played Deadlands, dude, you were near a bed, weren't you, dude? I saw you chilling, laying back on a couch or something.
Yes, but that was very much less than ideal.
Yes, okay.
Very much.
But I'm kind of in line with Jason, but like I said, John's got different experience. And dude, when you gotta do what you gotta do, if all I could do is play online, I think I would figure it out. I'd be like John. Mm-hmm. I'd love the bells and whistles, and I'd spend the time getting it mastered, and we'd do it. You know? So.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Rollmaster. I want to hear this.
So, Harp. So, I think that there's a good balance. You could have a good balance and mix. Recently, we've been talking about, Barry over Shadow the GM and I have been talking about starting up a new game, and we looked at Harp. We're going to do a sci-fi game. We looked at Harp sci-fi. SF, but we decided we're going to do Space Master instead. Wow, that guy in front of me almost crashed. He just tried to swerve into a truck. Obviously, he's not paying attention. Check your side view mirrors, folks. Anyway, well, actually, he doesn't even check his side view mirrors. He needs to turn his friggin' head. But anyhow, we decided to go with Space Master, the full-blown Space Rollmaster, instead of Harp, because we really like the varied critical tables. Yeah, and that's my problem with Harp is there's maybe not enough variety in the critical choices and things like that. But that's where VTT can really help because... Anyhow, with Harp, with VTT, so with the Fantasy Ground VTT, you can buy a module for Rollmaster where it does all the calculations. So basically you roll... And it goes through all the tables for you and just spits out the result. It just spits out the damage. And if you do a critical, it spits out the critical result. it automates all that process. So that might be a way to do Rollmaster if you're playing on VTTs. But I don't know. I mean, we always just copied the critical charts and gave each player the charts for their weapon or the charts for what they were going to have to roll on. And they would look, it wasn't on the GM, you know, they roll and they'd look at their chart and say what they got. So it didn't really slow things down because you weren't paging through the books because you had your chart. It's like when you play Dungeon Crawl Classics, when you're a wizard, you just print those spell charts out for the spells you have and keep them in front of you. So I don't know.
Those are reasonable solutions.
Yeah, yeah. Jason's kind of making a case for for me taking a closer look at Rollmaster.
Yep.
I mean, what part of me is like, if you need the assistance of, well, you don't ever need the assistance of the computer. It just makes it simpler.
Correct.
To play the game, I think that's kind of a negative on the game, in my opinion.
And one of our friends that used to live around here, Aaron, was a big Rollmaster proponent. In fact, he's worked for ICE some, and he just thinks it's the greatest game ever. And, you know, he was talking about the new Rollmaster is supposed to be coming out, a new edition, anytime now, supposedly. They're going to have an app where they're going to do all the – now, honestly, that would be boss if you could just push a button and go whip, boom, there's your critical. Yeah. And if every player had it, you just put it on your wizard criticals. I put it on my fighter criticals. The DM has those monster criticals, and let's roll it out. That would – that wouldn't be bad. And you and I have played together Rollmaster at least once, and I didn't hate the game. It was cool. I mean, it was fantasy. It was cool fighting.
Yeah, but that the excuse me, the
sorry, man.
The fight that we had, the single fight that we we did it. I think we had two sessions. I don't know if you were in the second
one. I was just in one of them.
So the one where we and you, where you and I played in.
It was one fight.
That was one thing. And then there was a big one that he did later on. I don't know if you were part of that. I think you and I were in the room where the ping pong table was at.
Yeah, that's where we played.
Okay, and then we had another one that was in the, dining room, but the...
I missed that. I was probably running.
There was a bunch of us in it.
And, yeah, so...
That one seemed a little more, because there were more people, seemed very strained. It was a battle royale type situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, also, but to be fair, Pathfinder gets strained with a lot of players. 3.X gets strained with a lot of players.
Sure, sure.
And, I enjoyed it. I thought Aaron did a good job, but I don't know. It's been a while. I would try it. I'm not sure I'm ever going to buy the books unless I just get wowed by somebody running it. I'm not running it. Neither one of them, not even Harp. Patrick made a good case for Harp, but I don't think so. I would play it first and see if I really liked it, then I might consider GMing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyhow, with Harp, with VTT, so with the Fantasy Ground VTT, you can buy a module for...
Okay, I just played that one.
Mm-mm. No, that's good. I think that's a good one.
Where it does all the calculations. So basically you roll and it goes through all the tables.
Yeah. You just said all did? That.
Okay,
yeah.
My bad.
Whoops, I have one alibi from the Positive Material Plane talking about Kickstarter. Yeah, I'm trying to wean off it myself this year. But as far as all these new products, I think like Patrick, I'm a board game fan. And I think that it's easier with board games because board games are easier to do one and done. You get it out, you play it, you can put it up, move on to the next board game, where with role-playing games, you know, it's not all that satisfying to always just play one shot, never play it again, right? Or, you know, infrequently play it. You want to play campaigns, and you have all these systems you want to play campaigns in. Now, modern board games, these big board games are set up for there are board games that come that you could play for months straight. You know what I mean? Patrick will tell you about them. But for the most part, board games, I think, are easier to cycle through quickly.
Yeah. Remember the old board game, Descent?
Right.
Our buddy Greg ran. That's a campaign style. Dungeon of the Mad Mage, which I have, is a campaign style. But they're pretty short. But even so, yeah, you can play for a long time. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, on to the main topic. Fudging dice. No. Okay, so fudging, there's two kinds of fudging, right? If you're rolling on the random encounter table, you know, and you roll a result and you think, well, no, I'm going to use this other result instead, that's fine. But if you're rolling dice in combat, you're rolling dice that really matter, then I don't think you should fudge those dice at all. You know, Sir Fanghorn or, the dragon in the Rollmaster game definitely would have died in my game. And then, like you say, you come up with a workaround for it, for the campaign. That doesn't mean it's the end of the campaign, you know. They killed Beowulf, but guess what? Or not Beowulf, damn it. They killed Grendel, but Grendel wasn't the big bad. Grendel's mother was. So you just got to come up with Sir Fanghorn's mother, right? It's just a matter of working it out.
Yes, and Jason, your check is in the mail.
Yes, sir. I lean toward that camp. We love us some Patrick, but we agreed to disagree last week, so it's okay. It's
especially given that the role being fudged wasn't a GM role, and the GM said they were fudging it.
You know,
that's I think if the GM is going to fudge their own roles, that's one thing. But
I'd have been intrigued to see if a player who wasn't a GM would have been as agreeable. Patrick's a GM, so he felt for Aaron in that situation when Lord Greenwood, the dragon, got zapped. So he willingly even brought it up. So I don't know if all players would, or many players would do that, let alone a player who's never GM before. And he's all about, especially a power gamer who I'm not knocking. Dude, I don't know about that, dude. They'd be like, come on, dude, I waxed that dude.
Right. I get the thought. I understand where he's coming from.
Cooler story.
I just don't agree.
Dude, and what happens if you say, I didn't bring this up, but what if you let Lord Greenwood survive, and the next time you fight him, he rolls a critical and annihilates the party too early? That's kind of cheesy, too.
Sure.
You're going to fudge it again? I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, it just requires the GM to improvise a little bit. And I think it was Joe that said this, but there is nothing at all wrong with saying, hey, guys, wasn't planning on that. Give me about 10 minutes, or even not saying that. But, you know, after that, you know, big dragon gets blown away by the lightning bolt, you say, okay, guys, this is a good place to take a 10-minute break. Let's take a break. And then, you know, regroup. Is what it is.
Yeah, I got that from either or both. John from the Red Dice Diaries and Grognard.
The 10-minute break. That idea? Give me 10. Go smoke them if you got them.
Radio Grognard. What does he call himself?
Glenn. The old man Grognard.
Old man Grognard. Right.
Yeah.
So I think both of them have said that exact phrase in their podcast, and it just is a good idea.
It's Glenn to his homies.
Yeah. Glenn.
But you know, another thing, too, before you go to the next one, I think another thing you do, if you're really stymied, if it's not too early in the game, you say, look, we're going to have a short session tonight. I really need to rethink this. Campaign's not over, but that was a hell of a shot. Awesome. Maybe role play like I said before, role play the town being totally excited about them. Give them a big reward. Let it be cool. And then say, hey, we're going to call it short this week. So you can go I can head back to the, my bat cave and plan, you know?
Right. Oh, and as a side note, anyone who's been really listening to the show, the two or three of you out there that are listening, will have noticed that Jason always gets top billing on these call-ins.
Yeah.
That's really only because he calls in first on Anchor. And I probably should put that in the show notes. I never have.
You know, Joe, truthfully, we just like Jason better than everybody. Let's just be honest.
Well, he does agree with us a lot.
So yeah, Jason's our Jason's our favorite. So I'm sorry. You know, if it hurts your feelings, No, no, really. It's just Jason he's really consistent. So, hey, I think he deserves a little prop.
After we drop a podcast, he generally sends a message like at 5 a.m., something like that, early.
He's a rock. He's simply a rock star. Let's just admit it.
So if you want to be heard, you can drop us a line at Anchor on Anchor. And I'll put that this time I'll put that link in the description, and I will link in the show notes, and I'm going to try to incorporate that in other ones. If you call early enough, we'll be first.
Mm-hmm. No, you won't, because you're not going to be Jason, because he's awesome.
All right. So
you could be second. Think of it that way. Shoot for second. That's a brave, brave move.
Now, sometimes this next fellow beats Jason.
Whoa, really? But,
well, sometimes. Time because of the time difference.
Oh, look at John.
John
playing the European time difference.
He's cheating.
I think he is, but I respect that.
Yeah.
He plays to win.
Plays to win.
You could say I've got henchmen in my game that don't murder you in your sleep. Or you could say I've got henchmen that are playing the long game. You're in the episode, guys. Take it easy.
Yeah, John. Yeah, baby.
The long game. Of course, that's in reference to last week's comment by me, because there's a lot of things that I remember as a child playing D&D, as a tender youth, innocent as the driven snow, being murdered in my sleep.
By the evil friend.
My character being murdered in my sleep.
Hey, at least I didn't kill you, Joe.
It was the one female character I ever played.
Was it? Okay. That's what happened when I play a woman. I said, well, Joe, you're a dude. Don't play a woman.
Yeah.
That's what I said.
I got punished.
You did. Actually, you didn't, but that's hilarious.
No, it is fun.
Oh, damn, guys. I guess I'm just going to have to turn my geek card in then. But in all seriousness, though, yeah, don't get me wrong. I do still enjoy the Dresden Files, but like a lot of these things, you know, a TV series as well. And as Joe was saying, you know, all sorts of urban fantasy, you know, if in your first mission you beat a werewolf, in the next mission you've got to beat something more powerful. And the mission after that, you've got to beat something more powerful than that. And it just keeps going up to the level where, like, you know, you're fighting gods and sort of things like that and all these. And as you guys said, trying to cram in desperately every single piece of like mythology from sort of like around the world just to get new ideas. So whilst I still do enjoy them, I preferred the sort of noir, like detective vibe, to be honest. And at the risk of putting my geek card at further danger.
Actually, after the very last novel, yeah. I think he might be returning to that.
Oh, cool. So, I think John makes a good point. I mean, that first book where he fights that toad demon that nearly kills him and his girlfriend, that was pretty intense. And that was cool because he wasn't powerful enough to just blast that thing out of existence with no effort. So it was pretty cool. So I get what John was saying. They have a lot of things they could have kept at a lower key, but I still enjoy the Dresden Files. I think they're really good. The world's rich, and yeah, they go a little crazy with high powered stuff, but dude, the writer Butcher is just hilarious. He's got a thing that I like the way he writes.
I think that what keeps me going is the pop culture references that are relevant to me. Mm-hmm. Not really doing anything current.
Right.
Which is also nice.
Yep.
The only thing that bothers me is the vibe of, this might be more negative material playing material.
Okay.
But how he treats God.
Really?
Yeah. To me, there's kind of the vibe of all religions, really, kind of, at least modern, they're all kind of worshiping the same fellow.
I was saying that. Okay. I guess I didn't get that. I didn't pick up on that. Well, was opposite. I thought it was kind of impressive that it seemed like he always talked about God in reverence. Surprising.
No. I'm not saying he doesn't.
Okay.
But with the knights.
The idea of a Buddhist who actually worships God and an atheist who is
an atheist. How can an atheist be? It doesn't make. He tries to explain it, but it's really kind of dumb.
Dude, well, it's funny though. But like, I love that one when was it? Who's his little cop partner? Murphy.
Yeah.
Murphy asked him. He's an atheist. After a big fight, someone mentioned he's an atheist. He goes, "You're an atheist." He goes, "Yeah, it's getting harder and harder to maintain that." That's what he said. So I kind of like
atheist. See, the thing is,
an atheist knight templar. Yeah, it's weird.
And they're supposed to run on faith.
Mm-hmm. How does that happen?
Yeah.
Yeah. Unless it's like, well, let's not get. But I was thinking to get biblical. When Paul was converted, I mean, he was converted as hardcore as you could be converted.
Yeah.
Paul, you know, Paul Saul on the road to Tarsus. I mean, and again, you Bible folks might have been to Bibles, but we are, because we're Christians, we believe it. And Christ appears to him and says, hey, what are you doing to my people? You know, and so maybe this is kind of a variant of, look, you're an atheist. OK, I'm going to give you the power of a Knight Templar and I'm going to show you that I'm real. I'm not saying Butcher's thinking that deep, but that's fair enough. That's a fair criticism. I guess it don't bother me as much, but I get what you're saying.
Yeah. And also, John, don't worry about your geek card. I forgot all about May the 4th.
Oh, and also, we literally have no power to take it away from him. I hate to, I shouldn't say that, but we don't.
We don't.
I know, sucks. Oh, well.
I had a similar reaction to the sci-fi series, I think it was The Expanse, where it started off in the first season was all about this sort of sci-fi detective guy trying to unravel this mystery. And then it just sort of like spun away from that after the first season had finished. And since that character and that whole like noir detective vibe, which I'm a big fan of, was a big attraction for me, I sort of like went off the series a bit. It was all right still, but, you know, it didn't have the same sort of appeal to me. But I'm not sure whether that's endangered my geek card any further. I'm now just going to go and curl up in a corner with my original Grognard t-shirt on and sort of rock backwards and forwards holding my first Ed Orange Spine AD&D books. Take it easy, guys. I'll catch you soon.
Oh, man. Orange Spine, though.
Orange Spine.
That's second printing. Dude, come on now. If you don't have the first printing, first edition... Come on.
What color spine were those? Were those dark?
Well, they varied. I think they were pretty bad, actually. The orange spine actually looked better, generally speaking. Much better art. Oh, the original with the demon thing. But yeah, no, dude. Oh, The Expanse. Jason's going to be pissed. Spoilers, dude. I've only seen a few episodes of the first season, but I was thinking it was going to be a whole noir thing, but that's kind of disappointing. I'm not sure I want to finish. They're going to change up after season one.
There's this other sci-fi show that tried to be like a detective noir type of thing, but I'm trying to remember the name of it, where it was the guy wakes up and he's in a different body.
Is that where everybody's the rich folks are buying bodies?
And, yeah.
Yeah. That was a carbon.
Yeah. Something about carbon.
Something carbon. I think that became a total sex fest, dude.
Yeah. It was just porn.
Yeah. It was basically
porn. Pretty much.
Yeah.
Oh, a couple of other things. First of all, I thought taking the Thanksgiving torch from Patrick was a great phrase, although I've got to admit, I'm mainly enjoying the negative material playing at the minute. That segment, lovely. Also, got to agree, you know, where Patrick was talking about that all the people he's met that are sort of positive in his life, he's mainly met through gaming. And I've got to say exactly the same thing. Most of the friends I have now that have been like long-term friends rather than just like acquaintances are people I met originally through gaming, even if they don't game now. I mean, take for instance my wife. She used to work at our local gaming store, and that's how we met, you know. And all of the sort of like the friends I have now, they're either from LARP or like tabletop and stuff like that. So I think that's a really positive point to make about the hobby, that it does foster these relationships. Anyway, I really enjoyed the episode, guys. I'm going to get back to listening to it now. Take care.
Dude, John must have been one of the ones that quit us when we started being too positive. I really don't think we've ever been too positive.
I don't think so. No,
that's cool. I'm glad he likes the negative ones, because I like giving them. And we got some tonight.
We do. On that positive tip, with meeting most of your friends in gaming and you have long lasting positive relationships.
Yep.
It kind of really speaks against the whole negativity that some of the wokesters have.
Yeah.
Towards the game
in general. It's not real.
It's not real. They're talking about a world that does not exist.
Yeah, and Joe and I met. We talked, I think, this before in seventh grade after going to football practice. But having said that, dude, we were into gaming quick. And Joe and I, we share a deep seated love of role playing games. And even early on, he was the one. You're the one dude that I could always know that I could sit and just talk. We talked about our late nights on the porch out at Granny's, you know, and we were like just discussing gaming and this and that. You kept telling
philosophy, we didn't really learn any of it.
We didn't know, and faked it. Everything I learned, I learned it. Everything I needed to know, I learned playing D&D. No, that's not true. But you expand beyond gaming and you lead to other things, because when I find out, you know, Joe likes wizards, I know the guy's a cerebral dude. So that leads to other questions. You can have deep questions. You can have challenging questions. And, you know, and whenever he knows that I won't give him any magic items, he knows I'm a super stingy dude. And he's like, I hate this guy. So it works out pretty good.
It's a very odd train of logic there.
Well,
one could almost say that was not logic.
They could. That would be strange, considering I'm extremely logical, except when I'm not. Because I'm a people.
Hey, guys. Jason here. I wanted to call back because I felt maybe I was too negative to Patrick. Well, I wasn't trying to be negative towards Patrick, but I'm worried that the way I came across seemed that way. And that wasn't my intent. So I hope he didn't take it that way, you know, with my comments on the idea of Fudge and Dice and on Rollmaster and Harp. I definitely wasn't trying to invalidate his opinions. Also, as far as the DC Unlimited online thing goes, they do have Action Comics number one. They have 460 issues of Action Comics, 693 issues of Detective Comics, 548 issues of Batman. They've got all kinds of comics on here. So, yeah, you could definitely, if you got it for a year or two, you'd be a reading fool if you got through everything that's on here. All the older stuff that, you know, we enjoy. So,
yeah, don't worry about hurting Patrick's feelings. We try to do it all the time, and he's kind of hard to get his feelings hurt sometimes. So,
yeah,
feel free to disagree with him.
I mean, we were right there talking to him, saying practically exactly the same thing you did.
Yeah, and we just agree to disagree, which would be nice if people could do that all the time.
Yeah,
you're he's
different
welcome
play to, style.
Patrick is fully welcome to the wrong opinion.
Right. That is
Patrick,
completely correct.
Baby.
Plus, you haven't hurt his feelings yet.
No, so keep working on it.
Well, he hasn't really heard your response.
Huh?
He hasn't heard the response yet.
That's true. And then he will be hurt, so wounded even. And
if it happens, it will happen in the future.
I'll have to hold him tenderly at Cabin Con and burp him like a baby. Dude, I'm already in Cabin Con mode.
Yeah, Joe, you are.
That's crazy. Next week, sucker.
Goofy.
Next week.
Next week. Next week. And that is all with the call-ins. You can call in to this show on Anchor.
Yep.
If you go to, let's see, let me find the link. The link will be in the description, as they say in the YouTube land.
Okay.
anchor.fm/biggestgeekus.
Nice.
And on that page toward the front or toward the top, there's a link called message, and yep, you just go from there.
Yep. I badger Grognard, I badger Tinkar, and a few of the other guys by doing that.
Badger.
John, badger them. Some good messages from John and Jason.
Yes.
All right. Thank
Alrighty.
You, guys.
So, hold on a second
time?
While I get going here, get the right screen up. All right. Okay. So, it requires math and reading. Yes. What does that mean?
Yeah. So, in the positive material plane, one thing I thought, as a teacher, I love RPGs because generally they require you to do some math. Pretty basic math, but still, you're constantly working numbers and probabilities. And when you build a character, you literally say, well, how can I make this guy most able to do the thing that he's good at and still kind of shore up his weaknesses? So you do a lot of like statistical, I mean, you do it's baby level, and I don't mean that in a bad way, but in your mind, you do some hardcore reasoning. I mean, the guys that build good characters, say in 3.x, they're doing some math. You know, granted, it's not high level, it's not calculus, but it's pretty cool. And I think it's even bigger on reading. Dude, I was motivated to read actual novels because of RPGs. Because I felt like people keep, you know, Lord of the Rings, read The Hobbit, read this, read that. And I said, okay, Jack Vance, Dying Earth, I'm reading it. And glad that I did. And I think even when you come across words early on, like verisimilitude and milieu, we saw those words early on in sixth and eighth grade. We're like, what the heck does this crap mean? And so you got to look it up. So I think it's really good for teaching those skills in a fun way. I got a story. Go ahead. You want to comment?
Well, vocabulary, the best way to learn vocabulary is to read a lot.
Dude, my cousin.
Not sitting in a classroom saying, what is this word? Blah, blah, blah. Read. Your vocabulary will go up.
Well, my cousin of mine, Christopher, I'll say his first name, he went to high school in Bloomington his last 2 years, where I taught. And his teacher, early on, his first week there or so, had a vocab list, and one of the words was ethereal. And whenever she would, I guess I'm remembering this right, she would, like, before she would tell them what they meant, she would just ask what they heard of it. And he raised his hand, and she seemed shocked. He goes, "What does it mean?" He goes, "It means ghost-like." And that's exactly, I believe that was exactly one of the definitions. And he knew that. He told us, "I knew those words." And everybody in the class thought he was a genius. Who was this super genius. And Christopher is pretty darn smart. And he goes, but still, he's like, "How do you know that stinking word?" Because a bunch of 9th graders or 10th, 11th graders, they don't hardly know those words. And D&D, he goes, "D&D taught me those words." And he kept coming to me all semester long, this word, that word. He had knew from D&D. It was pretty cool.
Right. Well, this is the thing with government schools. Government schools.
Positive material plane.
Okay.
You're going to take damage.
Yeah. You'll throw a D20 through the internet.
The plane itself will attack.
The plane itself will attack me. Yes.
And I think those are great things about the hobby in particular.
Yes, especially definitely.
Probably more reading than anything else, because it's so, I mean, especially the earliest, even any RPG, it's usually pretty dense reading. So
if you actually read the rules, I mean, we didn't at first. We skim.
That's all we needed. We were so bright. We're like, "Oh, I see how this works." Not at all the way you played it, but we saw how it worked incorrectly.
Right. So the other part of Positive Material Plane is, as some of you may know, we have now a YouTube channel.
YouTube! Yeah, baby.
And it's essentially our Zoom meeting video format, ported over to YouTube. It's nothing fancy.
Right. But it's cool, man. Joe worked his butt off this past week, got a few up while I was out of town. And how many we got now, you think? 5 or 6, 7, you said? How many's on there?
Let me check. I think it's 7.
That's really cool. So now you get to put faces to the dulcet tones of Joseph here. Well, not me so much. I sound like a weirdo, but that's okay.
That's about me. So.
No, your voice is pretty pimp, dude. I'm not saying that because I just want to, because, you know, I hate to compliment you.
I know you do.
It hurts me. I actually feel pains in my body when I compliment you. But yeah, dude, he's got a good voice. And the YouTube is pretty cool. I like it. I have a tick that I can't stand where I pull my shirt. But that's because I'm a fat butt. And when I lost weight a couple years back, which, by the way, I'm on a new diet, Joe. Started today. I'm doing intermittent fasting. My doctor actually suggested it as one of the better types of diets. I'm going to be not eating 16 hours, and I get an 8-hour window to eat, but I can't overindulge. You got to have a calorie between 1800 and 2000. And I'm, of course, exercise and bike, and I don't eat until 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Intermittent fasting is supposed to be very effective. When you've done it for a while, it triggers what the intermittent fasting crowd. I don't know if it's a technical term. It might be.
Yeah.
It's called autophagy.
Yeah.
Once you've lost weight to a certain point, it's basically your garbage collection mechanism within your body. It eats all the bad stuff, and then you crap it out, or however you get rid of it. And a theory is one of the reasons why we have arthritis and other issues
that are
on the rise in our culture is because of our obsession with eating but not doing any exercise.
Well, yeah, I like to work out. I ride my bike. My bike's up now. It was kind of busted to get it all fixed up. Not busted, that's the right word. It needed an upgrade on several things. But I like to hit the gym. The problem is I like to eat. And so I got to control my eating. And I got so angry this weekend. I didn't tell you. I was putting a roof on with my cousin, and I was worthless. I mean, I carried crap around, but my knees were killing me. It was because I'm so big, and it's ridiculous. And so that's going to change. I'm telling you right now, I'm going to lose weight. I'm sick of this.
And we're obsessed with carbs.
Yes, we are.
Yeah.
And that's what I can't. Yeah. Well, luckily, there's not too many. I mean, I can do gluten-free bread because I have a gluten-free issue. So I can't go crazy on the carbs because most gluten-free carbs taste like poop if they're bread.
Yeah. But, you know. Bread, pasta, rice, all that stuff.
Gotcha.
We eat too much of it, and a lot of it's processed. You get it in a box or can or whatever.
Yeah.
It's bad.
So positive material play, nothing to do with D&D, but I've started a diet. And we got a YouTube channel because Joe is too cool for words.
So let's see here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You know, they probably say how many. And a number.
So at least five. At least don't. It's okay, man. Let's move on. It's cool. We got five.
That was Nine.
Dude, you can watch our old videos and probably this one soon on YouTube. And hopefully we're going to get fancy schmancy with this stuff. Maybe have a guest or two coming up soon.
Hopefully. Not that anybody has been asked yet.
Now, we have a segment. We have a topic. It's not a segment. I wrote it as a segment.
Oh.
This is.
Are we ready? Oh, it's a separate segment. Okay.
But it's not really, because I put it in the positive material plane, but part of it's going to be in the negative. So really, for you Planescape fans, this is in the plane of concordant opposition. It's halfway in between positive and negative, but that's not actually right, because that doesn't matter. Technicality. Yeah. Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Yes.
In this Dark Dice actual play, Goldblum's going to play a half-elf sorcerer named Balmer. That's pretty.
Something like that.
That's kind of cool, man. I love that dude. And if I was inclined to watch actual plays, which I'm not, I'd probably give that a look or a listen. I may listen to the first episode he comes out just because I like Goldblum. But I think that's kind of cool that some dudes managed to. I saw a little interview with the lead guy for about five. I saw the interview about 5 minutes. He said he just thought, let's reach out and try it. They didn't know him from Adam. And they said, OK, we'll do it.
Right.
So we're going to talk a little about the negative side of that and the negative material plane. But I think that's kind of cool that you can get somebody like Goldblum to, I mean.
It says something.
Yeah, it does, about the popularity of the hobby.
Right.
Yeah, it does. And, yeah, that's pretty sweet.
And, you know, I've liked practically every movie I've seen him in.
Yeah.
I can't really remember one that I haven't.
There's probably one that's not good, but not very many. He is definitely my he's a top five, a top 10 guy.
There is an obscure movie of his from a number of years ago called Mr. Frost.
Oh, I've heard that was really good. I've never seen that one.
You really don't ever see him play a bad guy.
Oh, I mean, that's interesting.
In this one, and it's like, oh, crap.
He's really good. I'm jotting that down.
Jeff Goldblum could actually be evil in real life.
Wow. I'm going to chop that down. I'm going to catch that movie. All right. Cool. All right, bud.
All right. So today's main topic is wasting time at the table of time. Wasting time at the table of time. You made me trip up my words, you weirdo.
Wasting time at the table. Sorry, guys. I write this stuff up. All my indentions and silly typo errors drive me crazy. I know.
You could have just said wasting time at the table.
That's what I meant to. Look at the top. The title says wasting time at the table. Just get on with it already.
Yeah.
Table.
table of time, you weirdo. Anyway.
The table of time. Sounds like an artifact.
Right.
None shall sit at the table of time but the gods.
So mostly, since you put it at the top, it's mostly the player's fault, according to you.
That's funny. How did that go first? Well, here's how I designed it, dude. So it's the player's fault. That's part one. And then part two, it's the GM's fault. Now I have a couple that I've decided to put in both issues there. And of course, I expect you to add some to the GM, because I found six things that I thought could be player's fault and only four things that could be GM's fault. Oh,
you thought of me first.
And then three things where it's everyone's fault. So, yeah. And so some of these are revisits of ideas. And it's from this perspective of literally wasting time when you're sitting down at the table. After you sit down, this causes you to waste time.
So, yeah. So I'll take the player's fault. I'll take lead on that.
Do it.
Splitting the party. Splitting the party in books, in movies, in television shows provides a lot of extra story material and interesting situations. At the game table, if you don't handle it correctly, it just everything can come crashing down to people standing around or sitting around twiddling their thumbs, nothing to do.
Searching Facebook, playing Minecraft.
Right.
I would maintain, even if you do it right, it's probably going to be hard for some players to not feel like their time is being wasted, at least a few moments. But, you know, well, I don't know.
Well, just an interjection. Doing it right by some people includes when the when you've changed spotlights to a new player, the other people at the table get to play NPCs or run monsters or something like that.
What do you think of that? What do you think of that strategy?
Well, as long as they're not handling major NPCs and they get to find out things that they shouldn't.
Right.
Who cares?
Just basically handling. Look, you get to play the purple worm. You get to fight.
Make rolls, do stuff. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's actually pretty cool. Do you recall any times where we've done it? I'm not sure I've had many situations because we talked about this with Patrick some too, but I want to put it in terms of wasting time. I'm trying to think. I don't think I've ever forced a party split, maybe with a trap. Probably a teleport trap would be something.
Teleport trap or
but
something.
But I'm not sure.
A room gets divided in half or something like that.
I'm not sure I've ever handled it well. I think I just handled it the best of my ability.
We just powered through it.
Yeah, there are probably moments people are sitting around twirling their thumbs. I think the idea of using monsters is actually great, letting players play monsters. I think even the one idea they mentioned on that one article I posted last week was this would take perfect timing or perfect planning and a little maybe railroading, but have the players be doing different things. And imagine going in a circle. You got three groups. You got a pair of adventurers each. And you go, you two do this, give them a couple of minutes, or give them some actions, and then respond, give the next two actions and respond. But that's a lot to juggle like for initiative. The GM. Yeah, like an initiative where they're all right. In it, and you just go, you know. And so, but it'd be fun.
Easy for the players.
Yes.
It would be really much harder for the DM.
Especially if everybody was in the same initiative. So let's say group one got initiative. Rolled a 15, let's say using D20, and their monster rolled a 16 or 14 to go second. The second group, however, their monster rolled a 20. So do I go to them first or do I just keep it separate? And do you want to have separate groups of initiative? That sounds tricky. I mean, it could be done, but it would take a very carefully orchestrated hand.
Or what if your three sets of people are doing different things? One group's having combat, the other one's doing exploration, and the other one is in town somehow.
Correct. Correct.
And then there, not only are you handling the switcheroo between them like initiative, only some of them are doing initiative.
So and it's
that,
very
that would yeah. be weird too.
Well, it's very hard too if you didn't do initiative, but imagine even handling it in general. So let's say you could go into Greyhawk, City of Greyhawk, massive metropolis in the world of Earth, and two characters I mentioned, Joe and Patrick, Lazard and Brock, they end up going to the bar, and a couple of half-orc barbarians had enough of Butch, and they're going to finish him this time and get into a big fight. So you guys are initially fighting. I know, but that's what they think. You're about to lop their heads off. Let's just pretend they think that.
Pretend.
So, and yeah, and let's say they all have, you know, they have like necklaces of non-vorpalizing. I would do that to screw Joe. So anyway, then let's suppose the other guys are going to go talk to the priest, two guys, the dwarf. All right, let's say the dwarf is dead. And then you've got Debbie's character going to try to raise him. So Josh and Debbie are at the priest, and the priest isn't the exact same alignment, not the exact same religion. So they got to do some talky-talky, smooth talking. It's going to be a tricky negotiation. And then the last group is going to, the last two guys, let's say it's Joyce playing a bard, and your wife Jen playing another warrior. And they decide they need to buy some magical goodies. They know someone at a shop that owns some little potions and things, and they head off there. You've got negotiations, you got fighting, and you got this shopping trip, which is not meant to be a negotiation, they're just buying. The fighting will go fast in terms of turns. Mm-hmm. So I guess, how do you gauge? I say you go first, fight, fight, fight. Do I give you two rounds? Do I give you three rounds? And then if I do, I think there's a danger when I hop to Deb and Josh, Deb may get into a deep philosophical discussion. You know, my wife is inclined to talky-talky, but that's okay. That's the spotlight. That's the time. And I think that could drag on more because, you know me, I tend to respond. If someone's like, I want to start talking in character and I'm being super role play. I'm like, I put my role play hat and I jump right on in. We'll do it. And I can forget. And maybe mm-hmm. that's me or just the idea to me, role play takes more energy and focus and you can kind of get blinders on.
Right.
So, and then of course you got people shopping and I'd be like, yeah, it's 4 gold and 8 gold and 20 gold. And you buy this and this. I could just hand them a list.
Yeah.
Player's handbook prices. Back to Joe. Attack. Right. Right. I mean, that would feel like the two on the end are getting the short shrift. unless maybe it's my table and the role play people may get the heavy dose of time, and you could be sitting there twiddling your thumbs waiting for your next attack. So I think that's a hard.
Sure.
I don't see how time doesn't get wasted there.
Yeah, there's probably some element, even if you do it really well.
Yeah, yeah.
Next are planning sessions, and that you mean like the A team, like where the party is got a building montage going on and stuff.
Think
like
of
that.
Our Colossal Plus Last Child of Tiamat encounter, where you guys literally spent an hour and a half planning.
Right. And that could be murder for the DM.
Oh yeah, then I'm like. I mean, I'm not really mad. I actually enjoy watching you guys stress out and, oh, we can't do that. And I've even seen you, and especially you and Deb are the ones that are most guilty of this. You try to read me. You look at my face and you do it all. And sometimes you do. Most time you guys can read me. But Joe's like, Randy's smirking. We better not do that. You know? And so, and I'm like, dang it. Watch your face. I do not have a poker face. But I mean, and then you can just be like, and other players are like, let's just do it. Yeah. And you're inclined to be that guy too. Let's just do it.
And so, I mentioned that either last episode or maybe just one in the past where I purposefully played Butch to get people moving along. Not that they weren't. It's just it seemed like we were grasping at straws. We really weren't getting something. And he was getting frustrated. And just telling people, I'm going to start doing stuff if we don't figure something out. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to do stuff.
Everybody goes, oh, no, he's the one with the Vorpal.
Yeah.
Doing stuff can be trouble. Yeah. That's tough because as a DM, honestly, I personally enjoy watching you guys plan. But after about 15, 20 minutes, I'm kind of like, just do something.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have enough information to do optimal.
No.
So just do something.
And especially at the level we were playing at then, we were so powerful. Just about anything we decided to do would probably be okay.
Correct.
On some level.
Yeah. And the way I had the dragon plan, pretty much anything you decided to do was not going to work.
Right. So. Oh, yeah. Yes. One of my favorites. I need to level my character.
You like that one?
At the session.
Cool.
We get to the table. Hey. Mm-hmm. I need to level my character. I'm like,
leveled up last
hey,
time?
Why didn't you already do that?
Hey, you're playing seventh level. Everybody else is eighth.
If you're playing OD&D,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's almost nothing to do, so who cares?
Correct.
But Pathfinder?
Oh, no.
Or third edition?
I'm going to pick my feet. Wait a second. It's even level. I get 2 feet. I'm a fighter. Ugh. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and that does waste time. I don't know how you get around it. It's just aggravating as heck.
I have done that.
Yep.
Yeah. But you know what I do?
What?
I don't say anything.
Right. I know. I see you feverishly writing things down. Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, here's the thing.
I will leave things off.
Yep.
I will put hit points down and things that I know off the top of my head, I'll write down. And
the base attack the bonus goes up.
The things that I can't recall, I don't have.
I would even be cool with someone saying, hey, I'm just going to pick this feat. Because it sounds cool. Can this be a placeholder feat so that next time I'll have my crap? You know, if they only done it once, one time, like you don't do it a lot. And so if you do that, I'd be like, can I just pick this feat? I want to take extend spell, but I may not keep it. I'm like, yeah, go ahead. Who cares? Just, you know, and I'll give you a mulligan. You can just change it next time. But I really, that gets frustrating, especially if we play once every 2 weeks. I mean, and that's why I think even you're inclined to do this when the session's over. If you level up, Debbie would rather sit there and level up like that last game we played in Savage Worlds. You guys got an advance, I think. And Deb and I stayed up and advanced her character because we just don't want to. She doesn't want to do it last minute and wants it to be done. So because, you know, when she leaves the table, gaming time is over. She's doing other stuff.
Right.
And I think your wife's like that, too. You know, you and I keep thinking about it and thinking about it. And they just kind of go blip, new switch onto something else.
Right. No, I don't overanalyze anything.
No, never.
Never. All right, page flipping. And this
could be anybody, not just players.
Yeah. How does Fireball work again? I don't think that's how it works. You know, when we're at the table, sometimes it's okay. Mm-hmm. So if you have the page flipping going on while other stuff is happening, well, that's one thing. But if you bring play to a screeching halt. If you don't, quickly get to the page, scan, figure it out. Okay, I got it. I mean, if you can do it snappy, it's one thing. But if it's like, I don't know where the page is, I forgot how to read.
Well,
I mean, what do these words? This doesn't make sense to me. How does that work?
If you try
to have a big rules discussion in the middle of action, that's no good.
That's not how grapple works. None of us know how grapple works. It's 3-0. Well, you know, and I'm blessed because I have a couple players, Dave and Joe himself, Mr. Joseph and Philip. You guys are great. Whenever I'm like, you guys got to make a so-and-so check, but we're in the middle of this. If you're going to, like a player say, I'm planning on going up, jumping on the bridge. I'm going to attack that ogre when it's my turn. And I'm like, jumping, how does that work? And Joe will be like, I got it. And I'll keep describing, keep going the combat because the guy that's going to do it hasn't, you know, gone yet. Or Dave will say, I got it. Or Philip goes, I got it. I say, how's that spell? Is there a DC? Is there a save on that? And they're like, boom. And that's from my perspective when I'm not fully prepared as a DM. I rarely have to open the book because I got you guys.
Right.
But even that, it would be nice if I was ready.
But if you don't know how something on your character sheet works, that's really your fault as a player.
It really is.
And yeah. I can't remember everything either.
No.
If I can't remember it and we're in the heat of action, I pick something else.
I want to, when we get ourselves settled into I like our fantasy Savage Worlds game, but I'm not sure I feel like Savage Worlds. I do feel like Savage Worlds is not going to be our game of choice for a long, long-term campaign. We're not going to live and die by Savage Worlds. Savage Worlds is going to be, how'd you call it? A palate cleanser. Yeah. Something we're going to do shorter campaigns. It's fun, but it's not going to be forever. When we get our D&D game that we like, whatever we play, whether it's an actual old school essentials, which by the way, I picked up this past week. It's pretty sweet. Or if we're going to play some variant that we've created ourselves, I want to get to that point like we were in 3.5 and Pathfinder where we knew so much of the rule. I mean, at the table, six of us, four or five of us guys, we practically knew anything. Somebody knew the rule we needed. You know what I'm saying? It's rare.
It was a close enough approximation that it didn't matter.
Or you could flip immediately to it, take 5 seconds, go, yep, it's +5, 20 base save, +5 for every 10 feet. Okay, cool. That can be a tricky thing. So the DM takes a little bit of guilt on that, but I say it's more the players because, the DM, if you're doing your job as a DM, you should, they're going to make bunches of jump checks. I read the jump rules, and I jot them down or I put a sticky note in so I know where they're at. Yeah, I agree. But it can be a time waster.
Oh, sure. Mingling with NPCs in a one-shot. The feast, the tavern, and the shopping trip in a one-shot. Why is this in the player's fault section?
Well,
this seems like, you put it down there too.
I did. There should be an asterisk by the next one too, but there's not. It is in the DM. We can talk mutual here, DM and player. So the big grand feast, and it's chatty, 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 get the NPCs, mystery, mystery, get to know people, or the tavern. Hey, oh, well met. Would you like an ale? Yes. And then role play. And the shopping trip. Do I want the blue colored healing potion or the green colored healing potion? They both do a D8 +4, but what color do I like? Can I dicker this price from 50 gold down to 47 gold, 3 silver and get into your character? And it becomes a real shopping trip, like someone who's a shopaholic and goes to the mall and is there for 9 hours. So that can, and that comes from both sides. The DM can also get way into it, The strange woman bent over like a crone is actually quite friendly. And she's, hello, welcome. And I've got many good items for you, and starts talking on and on, doing cool voices and getting into description, great description. And what is that cool sword? Joe says, it's +1. But I spent 5 hours describing it. Right. So that may or may not have a thing to do with the adventure. So the DM can do it too. Especially with one shots, I would say in a campaign, you should let the role players, the ones that love to role play, you should let them have an extended time role playing. We can't just jump, okay, next adventure, Temple of Elemental Evil, Lost Caverns of Sojanth, blah, blah, blah. But on a one shot, it just eats up time.
Mm-hmm. Now, your one shot, it depends on the purpose of your one shot and who you have at the table. Mm-hmm. If you have a bunch of budding thespians at your table, mm-hmm. and your one shot is about the shopping trip somehow, fine.
Right.
Most of the time, one shots are about a short scenario where you go do stuff other mm-hmm. than shopping or talking to somebody in a tavern. The tavern, the shop, and a feast can all be jumping off points, but if it's a one shot, it probably should be very small time-wise.
Probably at most a chance for each player to introduce themselves so everybody knows what kind of characters are there. Even if your characters already know themselves, something that can be signature to your characters, you can go, look, yeah, my fighter Butch doesn't take, he's quick to the trigger. When are we going to get out of here? I'm tired of this. So you get to do that. And right. the next person's like, hey, we got to talk to this guy, blah, blah, blah. And Butch is like, I hate it. I want right. to kill something.
Right.
Just a chance to do that, not to spend 45 minutes talking about how, to quote Tolkien, not quote Tolkien, but Lord of the Rings, how the soup tastes in every tavern,
right.
four paragraphs of how wonderful it is, and then break into song about how lovely it is. So,
right.
yeah, I think that can be a problem. Now, unless your one shot is it's a feast at the king's table and you got to find out who's trying to murder, who put the poison in the king's goblet. Nobody leaves. The king did not die. His little dude that drinks his ale for him died. So, hey, nobody gets to leave. The guards block the doors. We got to figure out who did this. If it's going to be a mystery adventure, which will not be your favorite because that leads to the next topic, then, you got to let that happen a little more organically.
Yes.
Joe loves that word.
Organic.
So the last one, it just came to me.
Fantasy sleuthing?
Yeah. No, not the idea. That's your idea. But yeah. I was always thinking it from the DM side. But it can also be a player side too. But let's talk about both because notice I just define it down there. I give more examples of it in the right. DM. And I think we talked about this a little bit, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, as far as on the player side, wasting time sleuthing, because what players can do is they'll look under every rock, they'll dust off every book.
My wife Debbie, God bless her.
Yep. Every corner of every room mm-hmm. must be, CSI kittens broke out, right?
Right.
Kind of like the planning session.
Yeah.
It can get into a lot. You can get into the sleuthing end where players are like, I don't know. This guy seems really shady. This clue mm-hmm. means can have 10 different meanings. And let's talk about each meaning in detail.
Mm-hmm.
So that can be really boring too.
That can be a mixture of the mingling and the planning session where you're in character as you do this. And so you're like, well, my character would probably lean toward this explanation, which is fine. I mean, if your character would be like, I tend to believe people are rotten turds and they'll stab you if you turn your back, they're going to believe it was all motivated by greed or just evilness, while maybe it was more motivated by, they hired an assassin because they wanted to have a certain ascension of kings. They killed this young guy. Look who gets to move in next. So right. It could be more pragmatic than that. But I mean, yeah, I think that sleuthing part can be a real waste of time. And you talked about your disdain for that, I think, before in the past. Well, and
I don't dislike sleuthing per se.
Correct.
It's just sometimes if your whole session, you're trying, it's a clue, like the movie Clue.
Mm-hmm.
I guess if it's played and presented right, it could be fun, but for me, a game session, I don't know. It just seems like I've had a lot of sleuthing and a lot of games, and it's easy go-to. There's a mystery. Go solve a mystery.
Yep. Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo this thing. We're going to Scooby-Doo tonight.
Scooby-Doo.
Yeah.
And I get it.
Mm-hmm. It's a trope. It's a thing.
A mystery is an adventure.
Yes.
It can be.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe it's just a little worn out for me. Because I love Sherlock Holmes stories.
Right.
So I like sleuthing, but maybe I was just getting too much of it.
Well, and when you're at the table, though, there's the time waster. If you're like, okay, look, I'm playing a fighter, Butch. He's a butt kicker. Mm-hmm. That's exactly who he is. Mm-hmm. If you harken back to one of our earlier episodes, the type of gamer, you're pretty high on the butt kicking scale. So am I. And so I don't remember if I was, I don't think I am. No, I'm not. You were. I was not. But you want, but if you're playing a butt kicking fighter, you're like, where's the butts for me to kick, DM? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's okay if I don't get to do a lot of butt kicking, but show me somebody's butt because I want to kick it, you know? I mean, you know, I want to be the dude. I want people to go, ooh, Vorpal Man, because that's how I roll.
I'm a hammer. I need
I'm a hammer. If there's no nails, then everything becomes a nail. I think, too, and our buddy Philip, dude, he is really good at mysteries. I mean, he makes things very hard to figure out. The problem is I have learned now that I've played a bunch more than I mean, for years and years, I was GM all the time. I never played one shot. That was it. But I've played enough now in the last few years that I feel your pain. You just don't, you can't help. You don't know enough as a player. When you're on that side of the screen, you don't know all the subtleties and intricacies. And you just, it's really hard for a GM to lay it out without giving it away. And so I kind of like how Gumshoe handles it. I almost want to buy that game just to kind of study that part of their mechanic. It's like they say, give the players the clue. When you walk in the room, his bed is disheveled. They pull the bed back, there's blood stain. And oh, look, there's a bird feather there. And then make your roll, make them roll and go, oh, that's the feather of a kinku. Kinku is a bird-like creature, humanoid in D&D. And you're like, really? Yeah, and there's been a flock or whatever they call them. I don't think it's a flock. What's the name for a murder? There's a murder of kinkus. That's a group of kinkus have come to Greyhawk and spent time in the Inn of the Welcome Wench. So, oh, let's go check the kinkus out. You know, because your roll was good, you know it's a kinku feather. If your roll's not bad, it's a bird feather, and you go to somebody and ask about it. But you're still, you get the clue, you see the feather. We're not going to roll for you to notice the feather. That's boring. Let's get, let's just get to it. And if they roll well, give them extra juicy things so they can move along, and you can go fight those bad kinkus or find out, oh, there's this group of people that are trying to frame the kinkus, because that does look pretty obvious.
Right. Yeah, that is probably better. With shorter games, especially one shots, you don't want to waste the player's time trying to
find a clue.
Finding the clue.
Yeah. I don't know. Cause how many times, and dude, I love Philip, but how many times in his games are you and I just looking at it like, I have no idea what to do. I don't know what's going on. Now, eventually it comes clean, but it's really tough. And I mean, I give him credit. He should write a story because he's got some good mysteries. That are hard to figure out.
Right.
Got any other things that you would say from the player's perspective? No, we had the DM's perspective too. Anything you think I left off or you would want to add as how players can be the ones wasting the time?
Distracted players.
Oh, right on. Yes.
Distractions can come from many avenues. Your electronics can be a distraction, even though they can also be an aid.
Yep, they can.
The game books themselves can be distracting.
Oh yeah, beautiful art or whatever you're doing,
right. Or just, you know, sometimes people are just, you know, like my wife is like, one of her nickname at her job before she stopped working there was Squirrel. They actually heard and they
Squirrel.
I don't know what form of word it is, but when someone, you know, did the whole squirrel thing, got distracted, they would say they pulled a Jenny. So
your wife's a sweetheart, but she can
she's distractible. She'll admit
she is.
And it's not really all that hard to keep her on task, but she is very distractible.
And Jenny, so, I think you told this once. I think she needs to have an alternate, like her hands to be kept busy when it's not her turn. Because I've noticed, like one time she was even, I don't know if she was crocheting or what she was doing. She had a little thing she was doing. And she piped up just out of nowhere. Just when I thought she wasn't paying attention, I was like, dude, she is listening to everything.
Yeah.
She's on top of it. So she can get away with it sometimes, though. Sometimes she can be the one not know her character and you got to do that. But my wife can.
I can't tell you how many times she'll say, I'm multitasking, but not doing it well.
people don't do that.
They don't really. We're not.
We're not multitaskers. No. We can start a lot of things and none of them work out well. But distracted. And the book can do that, too. I've been distracted with new games. I'm like, ooh, let me read this character that I'm not playing. Shadowrun. Ooh, what's a Decker do? I'm not playing a Decker. I'm a street mage. What the heck am I doing? Yeah.
And I know you have everyone's fault, so we'll skip that until we get to it.
Yeah. So shall we jump to DM's fault? Because we've already had fantasy sleuthing and mingling with NPCs. And this is something I'm going to have because I am the DM. I think extreme exposition. And I have and I have gone, and I still do sometimes. I mean, I can be, you know, I can. I think one of my biggest weaknesses is I have a huge buildup for a one shot. I explain. As you'll see this next week in CabinCon, I'll try to cut it back, but it won't work. But I will cut back some. But, you know, describe a tavern in gruesome detail or an NPC or a lair, unnecessary history. Now, I've cut back on that because it might be written down in my notes. In fact, it probably is, probably 50 years of history at a minimum for each scene. But not really, but I have reasons, you know, for things being there. But I think a DM can really, it's wasteful because if it's not that, I don't think that stuff for some players, it's not that some players don't find that interesting. They do. But that's not the point of the session, is to know the succession of the line of kings going to this king's tomb. Unless maybe it's a puzzle and the player's trying to figure out. Right. But I think puzzles, that's something that can be a time waster. But as far as the DM, extreme exposition definitely can make players, you know, lose attention, get sidetracked, and, you know, you throw so many names and people and places, they're like, which part's important? What are we doing? Is it Edwin the First or Norrin the Second, or is Grunhilde the Third? I mean, what's the important thing here?
Right. And, you know, I think we were trained in a way with old modules where I don't know. Probably it's not like anybody told you to, but we probably all assumed that you read the box text.
Yes.
So we kind of got trained into exposition in that way. A lot of us probably.
I think this last Friday, I think when Eric Tinkar and Joe the Lawyer had their little Iron Rations episode, Eric brought up the idea of box text. I think Joe liked it and Eric hates it because he thinks it's way too verbose. Mm-hmm. And I lean toward Eric, but I definitely feel Joe's love because honestly, I kind of like it. But sometimes it gets so big. I remember reading modules and they would read the box text. I'm like, wow, what does this room even look like? I have to reread it over and over to find the four or five snippets and go, oh, I'd have to look at the map and then have a cool drawing. I'm like, okay. Like, I love Tomb of Horrors. They had all the pictures at the end, the little picture booklet, because sometimes their description, while it reads like it's great, not all of it registered because it was so many dang words.
Right, right.
And I can only imagine the players who are hearing me drone, and in the corner you see an armoire. It is filigree. It has been filigreed. It has a bird on the edge, and blah, blah, you know. So,
and the details. I think in some advice has been since then, has been to paraphrase, because a lot of people, they're like, what are you doing? You're reading three or four paragraphs where you're sitting here twiddling our thumbs.
And you know, I generally don't read box text. I'm not.
No, you make up your own.
Yeah. Well, that was only seven paragraphs. I can do 20 easy. So, but you know, another thing that I think it was Tracy Hickman. I heard him at Gen Con say, I think it was Hickman. Someone said this. He said, it was an article he wrote. I'm going to give Hickman the credit. He said, sometimes box text can be, if you give too much detail to the players, like I said, you see these birds carved in the corner of this armoire, and over here you see this blah, blah, and I give this rich detail, you can actually lead players to distraction. Because if you say those things, they go, oh, he gave great detail on the armoire. It must be important. And I'm like, no. It actually has nothing to do with anything, but how could you not grab it? Joe's like, he spent way too much time in the armoire. Let's go check the armoire out. You know,
up well, all the bar. And we're trained in a way to think that way from movies and TV.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time, the things that get attention are relevant. So there can, you could have the screen, the camera pan over a big room with lots of interesting things, but it'll zoom in on the important thing. It'll go to that, or the narrator will talk about it, or a character in the story will talk about a thing to great detail. And sometimes it's the MacGuffin that doesn't come in until the very end to save the day or something.
I say, yeah. In these days, especially with so many, you know, we're old men and we got lots of experience of playing. I could walk in and say, okay, you're in a dungeon and you find the evil wizard's bedroom. And you see a canopied bed, shelves full of miscellaneous arcana.
Mm-hmm.
You would fill in, your mind would be racing with what could be there. Do I see any potions? Say, no, you see a bunch of books. Joe's eyes get big. And I say, you notice that each one of their bookends is a demonic figure. Make a roll. Oh, look, you know, if it's important, mm-hmm. I'll describe it as you're interested in it. I describe it. If you're not interested in it, I don't. Unless, of course, I've got some creature hidden there. You know, it would be kind of, I can say, well, what if one of the bookends is actually an imp, but he's sitting still?
Right.
Which makes sense. And boom, if you don't pay attention to it, he jumps and stabs you with his death poison, right?
Right.
So I think that's more fun. Now, some players would probably cry foul, especially back in OD&D days when Gygax was all about paying attention to detail. And even if you did, something would be hidden where you would never think about and never get the treasure. But not to knock Gary, but that's kind of how it was. If you didn't pay real close attention, you get screwed.
Or there would be a magic item hidden in a really in a place no one would ever look, because who cares about the third pillar on the left, the loose stone that you're never going to notice unless you search the third pillar on the left. And you know, we got to say the weirdest stuff, like we search everything in the room.
Yeah,
and you're like, really?
You check every little thing?
Want to take 5 hours to actually check everything in a room?
Yes.
Especially if it has lots of stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it's like, I think I've said it too. I know you mentioned that before, but in one of the Against the Giants modules, there is literally a frost brand hidden inside a mattress with no telltale signs of having been ripped. So you have to literally rip it open and you find a +3/+6 frost brand. I'm like, whoa, that's crazy. But yeah. And I think that wastes time with players getting one, overwhelmed, two, overwhelmed by minutia, and they get focused. They lose their focus and get off the beaten track. And sometimes you as a DM are like, oh, I got to lead them. And that's not really important. And you find nothing. Don't worry about it. Which is kind of like, well, then why did you describe it in such great detail? You know,
it was in the book's text.
Yeah. Another one. And this is one. I'm sorry. I'm just a believer in this. And I know there are players that DMs that say, I just do a wing it all the time and run a great game. Does not prep and it shows. So notice I qualified it. And it shows. Yeah. Lots of ums and ahs. But so you see this a church. Yeah, a church. And it's dedicated to Loki. And then it looks like no one's there. Oh, there's a light on though on the back. You know, he looks a little confused. DM moves slow. I think sometimes it can be a telltale sign if you're running an older version of the game or a game you're real comfortable with, it becomes one combat after another with no seeming rhyme or reason. To me, first of all, unless that's the plan of the game, that's boring. Second of all, I think the DM is just faking it. Or you fight 10 orcs, you fight 6 orcs, you fight 3 orcs, you fight 9 orcs, you fight 10 orcs, you fight an orc with a sergeant, you fight an orc with a shaman. Not that that can't make sense if you're raiding an orc camp, but it doesn't make sense if you're just some weird dungeon that seems like you're not even sure why you're there.
Oh, yeah. It can be very obvious.
Yeah, and I feel like, to me, I'm wasting time, even if I'm playing. Because to me, it's like, dude, this isn't really – you have no coherency here. Or extreme random encounters. Every time you turn around, the DM's rolling for random encounters. And you never even get to the adventure site. Because it's random, 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 random.
Random is all right.
Some is all right. And I think there's a sweet spot. You got to know how to do it. And I'm not inclined to be, you know, very 13th age or – 3rd edition or 5th edition about it, where this many encounters for the day or whatever. I'm not down with that, but I think
I really hate that whole
paradigm
where
you must have
X amount of encounters per day,
draining this many resources each encounter.
Right. Level appropriate encounters. It was kind of novel at the time.
It was.
At this point, no thanks.
I'm done with it. You be 3rd level, you might run into an ancient red dragon. I don't know what to tell you. Don't fight it. Don't even think about fighting it. Either run or grovel.
Right.
Figure something out. Those are time wasters when a DM does that, because it's literally just wasting your time. Why did I even show up today? Mm-hmm. You didn't prepare at all. And I know the DM puts a lot of work. Lord have mercy, I am the DM. I put twice as much work as anybody at the table. I guarantee I do. When I run, probably three times. But you know what? That's my job. My job is to be ready. Mm-hmm. So, and I love
it. You can be ready as an improv DM.
You can.
There are lots of ways to be ready. Lazy DM is a method.
100%.
It's not no prep. It is
low prep.
Prepping to improv.
Yeah, and I have no problem with that.
No.
As long as it doesn't show that you don't seem like you know what you're doing. I mean, and I've had several DMs that seemed like they were faking it. And by that, I mean, they just didn't know what the hell was going on. They were mm-hmm. just, and to me, this felt like a waste of time. Even if the encounters are kind of fun, it can be usually they're not, though. If they're winging it, it's pretty dull. And they usually think of them, you know, you default to orcs or dragons and cult goblins or, you know, boring, boring, boring. They're raiders. Oh, how incredibly exciting mm-hmm. for the 900th time.
Right.
Yeah. Anything else you can think of that DM does that can be and GM that can waste time at the table that he does specifically? Probably not, because GM's
the only
awesome.
Other thing is not knowing the rules very well.
Yes. Yes.
Now, you cannot know the rules very well and just go with it if you have a couple of rules under your belt, like make a dex check or something like that.
How about know the core mechanic?
Yeah, if you know the core mechanic, you can probably wing everything else, especially with D&D, especially mm-hmm. with certain versions where basically everything is a D20 add stuff mm-hmm. against a particular target number. So everything else you don't need to worry about.
Yeah, but a DM that doesn't know the rules is actually definitely more detrimental than a player that doesn't know the rules.
Right.
Because I can often know the rules for that player.
Right.
Especially a new player who doesn't know it. I'm like, I'll just tell you, you need to roll D20. See that number under will, add that to your roll. Go.
I mean, you don't have to memorize the rule book. I don't
know.
So we just, there's a few rules you definitely need to know. You can rely on the players. You should be able to rely on the players to know the rules for the stuff that the characters can do.
And some corner cases.
Yeah. But yeah,
I think as a DM, you better have a pretty good grasp on that. I mean, I don't mean you got to read the book inside and out, but honestly, I have a lot more faith in a DM that kind of knows the rules pretty well.
Yeah. Well, you know? if everybody's sitting down at the table for the first time.
Yep.
Or let's say we're giving a newbie DM a chance to play, you can give some allowances and not worry about it. But at some point, they need to know the rules.
For example,
to some degree.
Cavicon,
develop some skill.
I'm going to run the alien RPG. I better know how the stress dice work.
Yeah.
I better know how you attack things. I better know how you make skill checks. I better know what kind of skills a big machine person tech has. I better know what an android is if I'm going to use one. I mean, and you expect me to. It doesn't mean I'm going to, I forgot how this worked. And I was reading last night how the monsters work. Dude. The aliens are no flippin' joke.
I don't think the rules are too complicated. It just says you die underneath them, right?
No, listen to what they do. They have multiple types of aliens from the mm-hmm. different movies. You roll a D6, and that's the attack they do. Now, some of them are like roll 8 dice to attack, which, by the way, is insane. Some of them are like cut your head off. I mean, it's just if you get into combat with like a queen, if she rolls like a 6, you're dog meat. She just literally slaps her head off your shoulders.
Oh, so the D6.
It's just, that's what
this
happens.
This is what happens. So
yeah.
There's no.
Now many of the D6s are like, roll this dice, roll these dice. But some of them are like, eh. Oh, no. They're almost all rolling dice. My bad. Roll this many dice. If they succeed, she slaps her head off. It's like, dude, you better be like ready to rock. You're going to fight one of those aliens. Trust me, though. You're going to have some weapons and stuff. You're going to be able to hurt them, but it's not the name of the game. It's not an adventure time or, you know, adventure fighting. It's like horror, body horror, terrifying aliens. You better not fight them unless you have to.
Acid for blood.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
Concentrated acid for blood. Everyone's fault. Now, this last category, are we ready to move on? I think
we
are.
Yeah, yeah.
DMs don't have many faults. So,
yeah, you had 7 or 6 plus 7 other for the players. And 4 for the DM.
And 2 of the 4s were mostly players' fault.
Yeah, yeah, apparently.
I'm not biased at all. Okay, it's everyone's fault. Now, this is interesting. The first one I picked, and I probably have to qualify. eating and drinking. So personally, we got a lot of players, and we used to get together and we'd have meals when we play. A lot of players like you, I think you'd like to eat and play. Mm-hmm. I think that's cool. I'd rather not, for a couple of reasons. One, I got a lot of things I'm juggling. And if I'm eating, by eating, I mean a meal. We used to share. Well, sometimes we share meals.
It's one thing about snacks. Snacks is different from
snacks are fine. Grab chips, grab candy, whatever you're doing. I don't care. Grab pop. But if it's like actually eating food, like a plate of food, it's not as big a deal for a player. To me, most players I see don't mind. But as a DM, I can't concentrate when I'm eating a plate of food and playing the game very easily. So to me, I think snacking is the best. I would rather plan to play around meals. Mm-hmm. At 6-hour intervals, we might want a meal at the beginning or the end, you know, because we're going to be playing pretty heavy. We may not. And I think we get that going where we're meeting face-to-face, which I plan to be doing right after Cabin Con. We're going back to face-to-face. Not the day after, though. That would be fun. I think we may, if we're going to get longer sessions, just eat at the beginning or eat at the end. And plus, that gives you a chance to get the BS out of the way.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I think in general, that can be a drag where someone's like, dude, I'm starving. I got to go get – oh, I had this middle of a game. I got to go get food. I forgot to get food. Anybody want some food? Or even ordering pizza, it's okay. As long as you – if you haven't planned a break time, that's fine. But sometimes it can just be such a drag, you know?
Oh, sure. Yes. Mm-hmm. Definitely. Yeah. A lot of this can be in the background during play, but let's say it becomes your turn and then you say, oh, wait, I've got to order this food instead of having already done it when other people's turns have gone.
Right. If the doorbell goes off, well, that's my pizza. That's cool.
Yeah. You can't do anything about that. No problem.
And that's not even a big deal. Get your food. Yeah. I really don't care if players eat. I'm just saying.
As a DM.
As a DM, I don't want to be eating while
I'm trying to play. Got too much to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Too much player chat. And that's a hard one to handle because anybody can be guilty of this. Check out this movie last week. Played this cool video game. Reminisce. Remember last week we did this and Joe like put the awesome role and saved the princess from the dragon. That was awesome.
Right.
You know, and I enjoy that kind of talk, but I wish we could. And I know there's extenuating circumstances, but that is a time waster. No matter how you qualify.
It is. What can accentuate that is if you have long periods in between play sessions.
Yes.
And you don't have any contact or little minimal contact in between the players. So when you get together, if you're friends at the table, it can be, you know, you visit for a while because you haven't seen each other. You got to catch up and stuff. And that's just the way we are. We're social creatures and we do mm-hmm. that. And no, honestly, whether online or at the table, it'll be like that for us. It would be like that. So when we get to Cabin Con,
yeah,
we're going to be visiting a lot because we
have to see each other.
That's one of the things. It's a Cabin Con, for those who don't know, the two or three of you that are listening, it's not a regular con. It's an invite only. It's folks that we've known for 10, 20 years and maybe longer. Like, well, between me and Randy have known each other for over 40 years.
Over 40 years. And it's a gaming getaway. We call it Cabin Con.
And it's also a male bonding thing.
Mm-hmm.
And because we only have guys there.
Right.
And whether or not, you know, whatever. It's male bonding.
Yeah,
we get together. Decided. We play mm-hmm. games. And it's kind of like a retreat.
Yes, exactly. And I tell you something, ideally, again, back to our 6-hour session, here's what I would love, wish we could do, and I know it would be hard to pull off. If we played on Saturday, I would love to on Friday night for about 4 hours, have a bonfire at my house, out in the fire pit. Everybody come over. Just shoot the crap for 3-4 hours. Get it all. I mean, the guys that are playing in my game especially show up to hang out.
Right.
Okay. And we all talk, the ladies too. Just hang out, maybe eat marshmallows, whatever. Call it a night. And, you know, early enough to where, like, because Joe often has to work on Saturdays, he can get to bed and get a decent hour and a decent night's sleep. And then the next day, come back, we roll in at about 6, eat dinner, half an hour, 45 minutes, rolling dice by 7, play until midnight, 1 o'clock. I would love that, but it may be too late. But I would love, or even if we started earlier, started at 4:30, ate dinner. It depends on, you know, schedule, but ideally start at 4:30 or 5, share a meal, and boom, 6 o'clock, we're slinging dice, killing dragons.
Right. So that sounds good. That all sounds good. Good stuff.
Yeah. And I think it would make, I think that would take care of that whole reminiscing stuff. Sorry, I was late. Sorry, yes. I was late. Excessively. Once or twice, okay. Well, yeah, you're wrangling your sweetheart, who's a little bit of a all over the place girl, squirrely girl. That's okay. But you guys, you always text me, and you're pretty seamless, dude. When you're late, you kind of slide into your chair. Boom, here's my character. So it's a little less problematic, and you're not like 20 minutes late. But people that are excessively late, and I've not had much issues with that, but or don't come and don't let me know. I've just heard of this, but I know it would really – I tend to like have this quorum. I'm not – and honestly, I would rather not start till everyone's there. I'm inclined to do that, though I think I should begin. I think when we play, we should have, look, if we have 3 players, we're playing. And if you're not there by 7, we're playing, and you can, your character's there because you're coming, but you're just going to have to slide in and get with it.
Yeah.
That would probably be better for those that always show up on time or a little early, you know?
Right. Now, and on a related note, this isn't a wasting time thing. It's a weird thing I've seen on the interwebs. There's a couple of threads where people are saying, you know, what do you think about if the player isn't there, the character gets killed?
I'm what? Like,
right.
I think that's stupid. I'm like, that's my first reaction. That's dumb.
On one, it was a poll. The other one was just a question. And I'm like, well, if the player is not there, the character is not there.
Right.
How hard is that? Is that a thing where I know back in the day when we were kids, but it was always if we give you the character sheet and we say, you know, if I can't make it, someone can play my character. Mm-hmm. Right.
Until I get there, play Volsivar.
Right. So that was a thing, but we haven't done that in a long time. Now for the longest now, I can't remember when it changed over, but it's been a long time. If the player's not there, the character's not there.
Correct.
And I don't get the rest.
No, to me, I think because as being an adult now, and it's just not that important to me. And you know, I do like I'll put in quotations, a serious game. I don't want people focus, but you know what? If you're not there, Volsivar's there. Mm-hmm. He just can't be hurt. Nobody can affect him, and nobody can see him. And we're just going to say he's always been there. So when you show up 10 minutes late, you and Jen sit down, her bard and your wizard, they're there now. They've always been there. We're just not going to comment on them not fighting the first fight with the orcs, you know? So, right. I mean, it's just not important enough. Start now. He's here. Cool. Because Youth is like, hey, good. Both of us here. We got some fireballs online. Sweet.
Online.
Yeah. Anything else you could think of that can be, when I say everyone's fault, I mean, everyone could be guilty of this. So the GM being late, I've never had that. That would be weird. Especially if I'm hosting the game. Well, no, that's not true. I have been late before because I was out doing something, got some issues. I've been late to the table before this happened. So, bad Randy.
Bad. Bad.
Anything else you can think of that's kind of waster for just, this is more of a player's thing. It's anybody. I mean, like anybody. Whoever's at the game who could do it. I can't think of much else. Those are the things that came to my mind.
Yeah, we can keep beating the horse till it's, you know, really dead or undead.
Yeah. I say keep him dead. I don't want to have to turn him. So, all right, cool.
I think that's good.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
All right. Moving along. Cabin Con moment. How do we waste time at Cabin Con? There is never wasted time. Actually, sometimes there's technological issues that we've had. We've had the internet go down. And when we go there, a lot of us are trying to be high speed, low drag and have very little gear and rely on the internet for PDFs and whatnot. And it can be an issue with 20 guys getting their phones out, a few tablets and laptops and all this stuff on, you know, the kind of iffy I mean, not to put her down, the lady who runs that, the
does what she can.
Cabin. She does what she can. I mean, why she's not going to have a T1 line installed?
So no, that, in every cabin.
Yeah. So it's essentially a home router. Yeah. And
I think her son takes care of it when he comes to visit. That's how it works.
Right. And they've upgraded it a couple of times over the years. But 20 guys on a local network, and that's going to overload.
And like, you know, I've got a plan to use a YouTube video as part of my Aliens game. And if it doesn't work, it's okay. I'm ready to ad lib and move on. So
what are you going
to
play it on?
I don't need. I'm going to play it on my iPad.
Do you have much storage space on your iPad? Can you download it?
Oh, I didn't even think of that.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. Oh, well.
Well, it's YouTube. So if it's a YouTube video, you have to have software to download it.
Oh, I've got it in a list, so I can find it real quick.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, I think it'll be fine. Yeah. It's pretty. Yeah. It's like a minute and a half. So it's not, I think it's 3 minutes, not very long.
Right.
The visiting, but that's not a waste because part of us, that's why we're there, is to get to vacation and chill and see our buddies. Now, I have wasted time before because I have forgotten stuff. One year, I literally forgot to bring towels and toiletries. Mm-hmm. That first night, I'm like, I need a shower. Holy crap. I got really angry and I got to go home. Like about an hour away, dude. That's 2 hours, 2.5 hours of Kevin Con I'm missing.
Which one? Where room was that?
That was in that's one of the early ones in Lake George. I don't remember which one. 10, 11.
Why did you have to go all the way home? We got Walmart.
Because I'm dumb. Oh, I forgot all my maps. I left all my maps as well. That's why I had to. You're right. I was like, I'm going to run to Walmart. And I was like, oh, my God. I don't have a single map for any of my adventures. And we were playing Pathfinder 3X. So I was like, you got to have your minis to move. And I was like, but I've already got my stuff organized already. So I'm going to be ready to rock. And plus those Loke battle maps, I bought like six of them. So dude, you turn me on. That is so awesome.
I have a set of two.
They're beautiful.
And they are very beautiful.
And they're just, they are. Which ones do you have, the taverns one or do you have the dungeon ones, or do you have
the dungeon?
That's so good. Yeah. Did you get the double, the big with the double, the dungeon that has the two-parter?
Yeah.
Two different booklets.
Yeah.
That is so good. I got the sci-fi one too.
It's really wasn't really that expensive, to be honest.
Dude, dig this question. Dude, here we are talking about this. I bought the science fiction one too for my Aliens game.
Oh.
And I bought it on eBay, and then I got a second one about 3 days later. And then last week, 2 days ago, I get an email from that guy and they go, we accidentally sent that to you. Would you mind sending it back to us or paying for it? We would really appreciate it. And I don't mind helping them out. And I said, no, because I gave that to a gift to a friend. I gave it to Patrick. And I thought, I'll be happy to pay the extra money. I mean, I don't want to screw those guys. I know their margins are small. But then he goes, you got a PayPal account? No. I said, I do it through eBay. So I'd like to pay them. I don't think it's scamish because it was weird. They sent me two of them. I thought I got charged.
That kind of stuff can happen.
Yeah. And I thought I had
a lot of people would say your fault, not mine.
Sorry, it is their fault, but I'm not going to. No, it's
okay. Yeah.
Because I thought I had ordered it twice. I was like, dang it. And then I was like, well, I can give it away. And then Patrick makes sweet shirts. And I'm like, dude, he's getting it. Right. So that was cool. But anywho,
you just send him a check. You just mail them a check.
Yeah.
If you don't want to do PayPal.
Oh, yeah. There you go. I'll just send them a check. That's what I'll do.
Yeah.
I still got old school stuff. I'll tell them that. I was like, yeah.
If you don't want to do an electronic form of payment.
I will just send them a paper check. Give me an address and I'll send it to you. But I was going to say, so there's other times. So as a group, we don't waste time. What about when we're trying to decide on games to play?
One thing. You can do PayPal without having PayPal.
I have a PayPal account, but I don't want to connect it to my bank.
You don't have to. You can use a credit card to pay a PayPal debt. I'm pretty sure. So if they have a PayPal.
Yeah.
Try to go on the PayPal and see if you can just use a credit card.
I think I'll just offer up a check.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool.
So I'm noticing that your face is getting dark or you're getting shadowy. So I'm not sure if your screen is timing out or really? What's going on?
Hold
or
on a second. Maybe it's, I don't feel like I'm seeing myself fine. Give me a second. Tell me if this helps.
Yes. So, but it keeps, what is happening is you're going a little dim. You're getting, or it's not dim. It's just brightness. It's like,
is that better?
Yeah, I can see you better. But it is still, it's still doing a little bit of that. So it's because you have the light, the big bright light on the ceiling light.
Okay.
Randy's right. Doing some shenanigans with his camera there.
I'm shenanigizing.
The bright light you have behind you is probably screwing around with your the camera that you're using.
Okay.
Are you using your laptop camera?
I am.
Yeah,
it's probably maybe I should. Should I? What's a video filter?
At some point, you may want to invest in indirect lighting.
Okay.
That will be better than having your ceiling light on.
Okay.
That's what Roger. I have a lamp in a corner that throws the light on the wall.
Mm-hmm.
And that's that gives good. If it's okay, I mean it could be better, but indirect lighting is what you want.
Okay, I'll work on that.
Yeah.
Sorry if I'm
since we're going now. To since we're going it hasn't been an issue, but since we're going to do this on YouTube,
right?
So you just
I want folks to see this beautiful face, man. We don't want to miss out. We don't want to miss out on the love. But anyway, so back to Cabin Con, back to the comment.
Food.
Oh, that can be a waste.
So this is well, it depends on what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So there was a time when we in the past where when we first got into Lake George, we would go to a restaurant.
Yes.
And then we go shopping, and then we come back. Yeah. And then we decided
grocery shopping.
Because we didn't want to bring groceries with us. But Philip made the great point that you can probably just have a cooler and put all the food you need in the cooler, and you don't need to make a shopping trip, and it saves time. We can get to gaming faster.
Which that's what I'm
we
doing.
We all thought that was a great idea.
Yes, and most of us follow up with that.
Yeah.
Though we sometimes make a trip to the Walmart to get stuff.
Little odds and ends.
Yeah, when you have a little free time.
But then there's that the eating part. So I actually kind of want to go back to that somehow.
What do you mean?
Where we have like a, where we all eat together.
A meal.
At least once. Actually, I don't know. I was thinking kind of like we would, I don't know. We've tried to do this in the past. I don't know if it ever worked out very well, where we would try to coordinate what we brought.
Right.
And it would all be kind of like self-catered.
What if we did we could do this right now. I could post on the site. I could say, bring a dish to pass for Saturday night and just wing it. It could be anything. You know,
we're all pretty carnivorous, so it'll end up being
good. Meat. Yeah, it'll be awesome. Yeah, I think that'd be cool for a Saturday night dinner. That'd be kind of fun.
Carnivorous.
And we could do this on the fly. Yeah. I think sometimes when we try to choose games, you know, the board, we have this whiteboard that I put up with my easel, and we'll say, okay, it's slot one. Who wants to run a game? We write it down, and then people sign up. And it can be sometimes a hurried mess. People rush to get to a certain game, or people will slowly go, oh, I guess I could run this. So how don't you run that? And I think we waste time with that. And we've come a long way though. It tends to be pretty smooth now. And I think we've learned to like put games on the board for the next session. Like if we're going to do session two in the middle of the day, we put session two and session three on the board and get that all squared away.
Right.
I think it'd be good to have two at a time. I may try two at a time this year. And you did an online one time for us, tried to organize morning slots. That's disappeared. I think we're just going to stick with the board. Even the first day, I'm just going to go right up to that big house, put the board up. I'm going to write my game down there and say, hey, whoever wants to play, I'm running the superheroes game because Josh is now coming for 3 days. So I'm running the superhero game 8 a.m., 9 a.m. I mean, first day, rock and roll.
Good deal. Yeah, I think it's better that way. But as far as, in the past, it's been an issue. I think we've gotten better at it.
Yeah.
And I think what we've got now is loose planning. Don't worry about it too much. And we go with the flow. I think it works better since it's supposed to be relaxed. It's kind of vacationing. So we shouldn't get too.
Yeah. I've been a little anal in the past. I've been the one guilty. Wanting to make everything perfectly planned. All right. I think that's good.
Yeah. All right. So our next segment, dig this setting, Ravenloft.
Dude, this was at one time in second edition, I think the most second edition, this was my second favorite setting, 1A to Planescape. It was 1A.
You were in love.
I love me some Ravenloft. So the pros, great, tragically flawed villains, Strahd, Lord Soth, Arjani, who was a Rakshasa, Aslan the Lich, all powerful but couldn't escape the powers of Ravenloft. And I just thought that was really great. I think it's these are pros. I think it's great for visiting. It's a good tone change from high adventure to gothic horror.
Mm-hmm.
It truly makes PCs want to find a way out, especially the second edition version. I mean, you feel trapped by the mist. And the mist alone are cool. You get encapsulated by mist, and you're in mist for a long time. I mean, you guys knew, oh, crap, we're going to Ravenloft.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really a well-supported line. And I loved the art back then.
It had a great tone to it.
Oh, it did. So those are a lot of my pros. I thought that was some of the great things about Ravenloft. Well, what did you like about, if anything, Ravenloft?
Well, yeah, what I said. I have to be honest, as a player...
Not much.
Okay, so horror gaming isn't really up my alley.
Right.
I get the attraction. I think that Ravenloft is well done. But when you're in a setting, I don't think you need to know that your PCs are definitely going to win. But in the Domains of Dread, you're definitely going to come out of it not on the positive side almost all the time.
Even if you win, you're probably going to pay a price.
Right. And if you don't stay in the Domains of Dread, it's maybe not so bad.
Right.
But if you get to dip in, dip out, like you were saying, then it's fine. But if you have a whole campaign where you just stay in there, you can end up really messed up as a character. And it's, I think it has a old school tone that's probably amped up just a little bit too much for my taste.
Gotcha. Yeah, I think leaning into the cons, that's definitely one of them that not many players like winning with the cost. I had a trouble finding, I mean, even Joe was a player, I mean, finding players that enjoyed it and they were ready to, if I did a Ravenloft adventure, if I didn't warn them, their goal is to get the hell out of there. I mean, after you guys played a few times, you guys were like, we need to leave.
Right.
You know,
who wants to stay here?
Yeah, understood. And it requires, I think, significant PC investment. I mean, it's if you wanted to really get the vibe of the gothic horror, I think you have to kind of get into it. I hate to use these words, but psychologically and emotionally. And it's hard to pull off if you're just there for a one-off adventure, which a lot of times it was.
Because it's not like you're going to bring Barovia out of the Domains of Dread.
And plop it in the Forgotten Realms.
Or some other locale where it's supposed to be, because Barovia was ripped out of its original place.
Right, whatever world it was in.
Whatever world it's supposed to have been in. So I don't know a lot of the backstory well.
Right. So
I don't know if there was any, and I don't think there was, and if there was, you'd have to be pretty high level to go in there and say, all right, we're setting Barovia back where it's supposed to be.
Which could be interesting. That's kind of high adventure, which I don't think it is. Now, I do find it fascinating because we didn't really say this at the beginning. Ravenloft was a setting in first and second at D&D, but first, second edition D&D, but it was originally a module by Hickman and Weiss where you go into Barovia, the mists grab you, you go to Barovia, you got to deal with Strahd, who's basically Dracula, has this thing for Tatiana, who keeps every so often, some young girl is born, looks just like her, this woman that he loved so many years ago that was his brother's wife, and it's a long, tragic tale, and it's cool for a one-off. Then it became a setting. Now, in the setting, they went further details about the powers of Ravenloft. They're kind of deity level, but no one really knows what they're about. And they seek out these tragic villains who have done such evil in their life, but almost like, you know, Strahd has a tragic, I think he accidentally threw her off, or she jumped off the tower.
Something like that.
Highest tower. But anyway, they were tragic villains. And so the powers of Ravenloft are drawn to these sorts, and they grab them. Say Lord Soth from the Kryn world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he chased Kitiara, the dragon High Lord chick, into the mist, and it took him. And she was actually an illusion created by the powers of Ravenloft. And when you go there, you have to be careful. If your character does anything that's considered slightly questionable, you can gain the powers' attention, and they'll start to tempt you. Even mm-hmm. with abilities. And if you start doing evil things, you can find yourself unable to leave, because right. there were many domains where lords were, where you might become a mini lord of Ravenloft just in this small village, and mm-hmm. you start to oppress people. And I mean, it had a lot of cool flavor, and there were some good adventures, and there were lots of adventures, but man, they were trying to permanently defeat a lord of Ravenloft, it was mostly impossible. Even if you incinerated Strahd, they implied in one of the setting books that he would come back.
Yeah, I remember that.
The powers would bring him back. So it really, to me, lends itself to a one-off, and escape makes the perfect sense. You don't get to kill them. I mean, I never took you guys to the land where Aslan was. He was an 18th level magic user lich. Dude, I mean, and every domain has either mist or some sort of barrier where the lord can't leave his own domain. And he had these walls of bones that would be forever tall. You couldn't climb. They would keep going on and on forever. You could never escape unless you figured out the trick or made a deal with the Vistani, who are these gypsy-like people that traveled between the mist. They started with they started in Barovia, and they were kind of servants of Strahd, and then some split off. Or you got to get lucky, or basically you had to do something to get an opening to happen, and then you can escape. So to me, I think as a logical player, I even thought when they first made the setting, I'll be honest with you, as a con, I was like, that doesn't sound like a good setting for role playing. I mean, for D&D. I mean, because, you know, ninth level characters, they can mostly smoke anything in there. They had to do a lot of hoop jumping and rule changing so that certain high level spells didn't do what they normally did, or else it would ruin the adventure. I mean, right. really, werewolves, flesh golems, vampires, they're foes of mid-level characters, but if you bring in a 15th level character, a 15th level party, what are they afraid of? We got +3 weapons. Screw you, gothic horror. I got something for your gothic horror. Shink. +3 sword in your face.
Horror is done.
Well, and I don't think... And they had a rule about fear. Like if you saw something horrific, you had to make a
fear check.
A fear check, and it could have detrimental effects. Mm-hmm. And if you bring in a fifth level character, you're like, dude, I've fought young dragons. I've fought ogres that were rampaging, killing villagers. I've seen blood and gore. I've seen zombies. I've seen skeletons. I've killed werewolves. Why am I making a check because I see a ghoul eat somebody? I'm a hardened adventurer.
Right.
Well, you could argue you're not, but I would say fifth, sixth level, you're pretty hardened. You know? But yes,
especially
that was one
back
of the
in the day when it took however long it took to get to that level. These days, when you can get to fifth level in a month,
yeah, right?
Maybe you're not hardened by that time.
Correct. But you still get some of the powers. So I'm sorry, a fireball could wreak havoc in a Ravenloft adventure.
Right.
I mean, but so they would make a lot of little gimpy spell rules. They would gimp the spells and abilities of characters. And mm-hmm. paladins apparently were beacons. When paladins came to the domains, the evil lord, the great powerful lord in the domain, would know immediately a paladin was in his domain.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I get it if you're first level, and Strahd's not like panicking, but he's watching you, because a paladin is one of the couple of characters that could be a problem for him.
Right.
That paladin rolls in and gets to ninth level. Strahd's going to kill him way before he reaches ninth level.
Mm-hmm.
He might let him get to second or third. And he's like, dude, I can't take chances with the dude. He might find the sun sword and ram it through my face.
Yeah, so, I think high level characters, the mist probably surround them and then, you know, flee.
Yeah, the mists go, oh, wait a minute, you're too tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I'm not sure.
Horror is good for low level, low magic type of situation.
Or a different game other than D&D.
Or a different game.
Yeah, I think that was a cons. So, how would you rank this bad boy then for you?
Probably him. I think, okay, so apart from the kind of misplaced game that it was set in, I think it's well done. I think the stories are good and all that. The problem is that type of gameplay is small doses for me. So I could have fun with it, like one shots or short campaigns, but I wouldn't want to do it all the time.
Yeah. Had you asked me this in the heyday of second edition, this would have been, I would have had a new category, XLT, extra large tall, almost 2X. You know, I'm reserving that for Planescape when we talk about it. But right now it's more like a large. I like it. I'm happy with it. I could run a campaign with it. I would need the right number of players. I would need the right type of players. Mm-hmm. I would probably need it to be low level, and people would have to be really invested in story and wanting their characters to suffer, fight through the darkness, but realize it's going to, you touch the darkness touches back. Mm-hmm. And honestly, my boy Joe here wouldn't be one of the first people I would think of for that campaign, but that's okay. I mean, but it's really cool.
The only, I think I could do it in small doses and then perhaps something like this would be cool in a longer campaign. You dip in, the mist take you here and there, and then one day you're like, you know what? We need to plan for the next time the mist take us. And when they do, if they do, we're going to roll in there and we're going to lay waste to the lords of the domains of dread or whatever.
Dude, yeah, I told you, your idea was cool. I would love it if you're like, you know what? We want to end Strahd forever. The first step to ending Strahd is bringing him out of the mist. So you're talking about an epic game. We're 18th level wizards. Your wizard's been studying forever, trying to find every clue he can about the powers of Ravenloft. So he's seeking a way to get in and get out. And he creates a special magic item or a special spell that will let him access the domains. And he's like planning and planning and creates these awesome spells. I mean, this could be a 20th level wizard, 25th level wizard, who's like going and boom, gets in there, casts a spell, while the rest of the players protect him because the powers are coming at him, and boom, he teleports, frees Barovia from the domain of dread. And then you guys like, let's get this crap. Then you go, okay, Strahd, we're going to beat you into the ground. We're going to murder you permanently. You're done. And kill him and all of them. Yeah. Cause I mean, I'm sorry. If you got a 20th level dude, Strahd ain't ready for that. He got nothing for that.
Daylight.
Yeah.
Hello, daylight.
Meteor swarm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, forget it. So, yeah, that's cool. All right, man.
Okay. So, remember, if you're watching this on YouTube, we're going to do our normal end outro stuff. On the YouTube video, there will just be a negative material plane marker that'll flash up, and then we'll go into that. On the podcast and just audio, we're going to have our music. It'll play out to the end, and then we'll have the negative plane where we get to rant because rants are us.
We got some rantitude tonight.
Yeah. Anyway, shameless plug time. Mm-hmm. If you'd like to support our show, please help get the word out and check out the website at biggestgeekestpodcast.com. If you want to give us some support, go to the support tab. Share with your friends. It's much more important than any kind of monetary thing you can do for us right now, although we'll take it. But get the word out. Let your friends know. And check out the podcast and or the YouTube page or the YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. The link to the YouTube will be in the show notes starting with this episode.
Sweet.
If you have any questions for us, then you can email us at questions@biggestgeekestpodcast.com. And feel free to send any questions or comments, questions or comments, anything you want to drop us a line for. We'd also like to encourage you to check out a few podcasts that we like. Red Dice Diaries with John Allen Large and his wife, Hannah. Radio Grognard with Glenn Hallstrom, The Tale of the Manticore, which is a unique dramatized quasi-actual play. Tavern Chat with Eric Tenkar, Nerds RPG Variety Cast with Jason, and Shadow of the GM with Barry. There was one you were considering adding. What was that? Do you remember?
No, but I need to look through my list because okay. There was one. Give me some time. There may be another one I want to pimp.
Yeah, so. You text that to me so I can listen to it as well.
Okay.
Please and thank you.
Yep.
With that, this is Joe.
And this is Randy.
And remember, if you can't be big like us, then be geeks like us. We are now in the negative material plane, and we're going to start with the new actual play news.
With Goldblum.
Jeff Goldblum. I don't have a problem with actual plays per se.
No.
But the highly performant actual plays,
mm-hmm.
Where people are putting on a performance instead of just playing. I mean, to be honest, most actual plays where they're just rolling dice and doing what people do at the game table, I can't sit and watch that.
No, it's boring.
As an audio podcast, it can be useful to some degree to get perhaps get ideas for how to run your games.
Yes.
Perhaps. That's the most I'll give them. And I know why some people put their actual plays on YouTube and whatnot for extra content.
Yes.
Content for one reason or another.
Sure.
But these ones that are highly performant, like Critical Role, and apparently this new one that I
never Dark heard Dice.
Of, Dark Dice.
And adding Jeff Goldblum, it seems like could only do that. Could only make it more like that. More just role play.
He's just an actor.
But maybe he likes D&D. Maybe we don't know it. Maybe he is a D&D dude.
Right.
Maybe he'll like rolling dice. I don't
right,
know.
Right, right. Now, I just watched most of a video. I just didn't have time to watch the whole thing with RPG Pundit.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the right name?
Yes.
Yeah, RPG Pundit. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I got your name wrong if you ever listened to this.
Yeah.
Anyway, RPG Pundit had a video out, so I was watching it. And he made some interesting points. If this is the start of a trend of getting high-end actors,
right?
Because you know, right now not so much, but back in the day, Goldblum, he makes a movie, everybody goes to see it.
Dude, right? He was in Thor. He was in Thor Ragnarok.
Right.
He kind of stole the scenes. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good actor.
Yeah.
He has a very distinctive persona that almost all of his characters have a little bit of. Because he can't help it. It's his way he talks. Hello.
Your wife, you please take it in. Yeah.
You're on camera.
Hey, Jen. My baby bird is better. Squirrel.
Or actually, let me see. Are you on camera? Yes,
I
you're
see
on
her.
Camera.
Hello. I see her.
Your baby bird is better? What do you mean better?
I saw that today.
Big swelling on her neck.
Uh huh.
All right.
It got bigger today.
Uh huh.
And I called the vet.
Uh huh.
And it was an impacted crew.
Oh.
And I fed her, and I called Jackie, and she asked me to send a picture to her.
Uh huh.
And I sent her a picture, and when I was trying to do it, she was flapping all over the bit, and she shit all over me, and now it went away.
Maybe that's what she needs, more activity for that to go away.
Or more pooping.
But. You're in different clothes.
I'm changing again because she just shit all over me.
That's funny.
Anyways,
well, I'm glad she's better.
Cool.
Yeah.
I know that makes you feel better.
I was really worried. I just wanted to tell you about
my you, Jen.
Okay.
Shitty birds. Nice. Oh, dude. That's
so, great. As an aside, yeah. We went to the barn to see Jenny's horse.
Mm-hmm.
One of the reasons why we can't afford nothing.
Horses are expensive.
Yeah. I think that was Sunday or Monday. I was off Monday. One of those 2 days. Mm-hmm. There was a baby bird on the ground in the barn.
Rescue time.
And, you know, I was just going to walk on by. Sorry about your luck, bird, but.
Not the wife, no.
No, no, no. So we brought the bird home. And I was like, hun, you know, there's bird rescues. We can call them, you know. Later on.
Yeah, right.
That didn't happen. So we've got this little bird. It's cute. And it's real sweet when it's little chirping and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And she feeds it and everything. And I've held it a few times and it's nice. But it has had this little sack on it.
Right.
And like she said, it's gone away now, which is good.
That is good.
And the little bird had it on. We don't know if it's a girl or boy. I have no idea.
Right. Who can? I don't know how to sex birds. So.
Right, right. But now the little sack is gone and
yeah,
it's all good.
Sweet.
So, either it's going to fly away someday when it's big enough and has feathers and everything, or I'll have to buy a bird cage. Another pet. Yay.
If you're taking bets, I think it's going to be the latter. Yeah, probably. All right.
Anyway. Yes. RPG Pundit.
Mm-hmm. So if this trend continues, he said.
Yeah. So if this is a trend,
mm-hmm.
we don't know. But he thinks that if this is a trend, what could happen is Goldblum gets on this, other big name actors get in other series,
mm-hmm.
and it steals all the thunder away from the small time guys. Because and so that starts kind of starts a thing where the small-time actors, they lose everything, and then it's all the big time actors until it's not a thing anymore, and it just all crashes down at some point.
I think that's bound to happen, because I already believe that we're in a heyday. The bubble's going to burst. Eventually, D&D is going to go back to, I don't know if it'll ever go back to being uncool, but it'll just be a thing. It's not going to be, it's neither here nor there. It's just a thing, and it'll be less blatantly popular. We'll see how the D&D movie does. When D&D movie comes out, if that blows up like gangbusters, it's really good. D&D might continue its streak, and he might be right. It might push. Was he talking about pushing like podcasters and stuff out of the way so that only these
no is Critical Role, those guys are all bottom tier in the whole whole industry. They're so bottom,
it might push Critical Role down the
right. That's he's thinking that Critical Role, this show perhaps, depends. Mm-hmm. But
right,
any of these shows that just use, you know, voice actors who never really appear in anything. I mean, there's lots of acting stars that also have voice careers as well. It's all one thing, but there's also plenty of voice actors that you never see on the screen.
Roger.
That's what these guys are in Critical Role.
Yeah.
They're voice actors. Don't know what kind of living they were making. Who cares? But they're bottom tier. In the entertainment industry.
Correct.
Let's say Critical Role probably elevated them a little bit, at least in our niche of the whole thing.
Yeah. But you know, there could be backlash too, because if you bring in the big guns, it's going to get overproduced. It's going to be super groovy, and it'll become almost like a movie or a play. And some people might be like, yeah, it's cool. Others will be like, yeah, it's getting kind of dumb.
Well, that's the way I feel about Critical already.
Already, yeah.
It's not really, it's in the way RPG puts it is, you got a bunch of folks sitting around a table pretending to play D&D.
I don't know if I fully agree with that, but they're definitely playing in a very special way that most folks don't play.
You should watch his video. It's only 27 minutes.
I'll check it out.
Half hour.
Yeah.
And he has some other not kind things to say about that niche of our niche.
Okay.
And I kind of agree with a lot of it.
Okay, I'll check it out. I can't be too negative yet, but I'll check it out.
But I like Jeff Goldblum as an actor.
Me too.
I don't know his personal life. I don't want to know his personal life.
No,
I don't
thank
ever
you.
Want to hear him talk about social issues, because if it's a Hollywood person,
it's
almost always
extreme going to left. Be,
or just dumb.
Just dumb. That's a good, almost always. Yeah. Well, speaking of dumb, if we can transition away from Goldblum.
Let's transition.
The MCU. It's, I think it's Kevin Feige, the head of the whole MCU Marvel Universe, has put his foot in it again. He was talking about there was supposed to be a Doctor Strange cameo initially for WandaVision on Disney, which would have been cool. He said some people might, and this is a quote, and I got this on, I forgot where I quoted it from. It's on several websites. Joe, I have a link there. Some people might say, oh, it would have been so cool to see Doctor Strange, Feige said, but it would have taken away from Wanda, which is what we didn't want to do. And as Eric July on For Canon's Sake podcast said, if you stop there, cool. But then he goes on, because I agree. I think it, Strange would steal the limelight. Mm-hmm. We didn't want the end of the show to be commoditized to go to the next movie. Here's the white guy. Let me show you how power works. So we had to bring in the white guy comment. And it's the white privilege bullcrap, the things we get tired of hearing already. You know what? The MCU leaders like Kevin Feige, let them show us how stupid works, because they literally do that all the time.
Right.
They just put their foot in their mouth and they're just telling me, Randy, don't watch my movies anymore. I'm probably not going to watch the Winter Soldier Falcon thing, because they turn that into tokenism, stupid.
Really? Crap. Oh, yeah. I haven't watched Eric July's stuff. Captain he's had Falcon. Some stuff on that.
Yeah. And I might watch it, but it just, and even, one of our friends told me it was a scene that was kind of over the top lefty stuff. And I know the MCU is going to be dumb, and I'm sure Scarlet Witch is going to be so much better than Doctor Strange in the movie of Doctor Strange 2, even though he is going to have the title of the Sorcerer Supreme. And so, okay, whatever. But you know, this bull crap about, oh, woman power, no white guys telling us what power is really like. Because they're kind of right. He would show her what power really was.
Yes, the Sorcerer Supreme in the Marvel, okay, maybe the Marvel Cinematic Universe is going to do it differently.
Right.
But in the comic canon, the Sorcerer Supreme is the magic dude on planet Earth, of the Earth dimension, not just planet Earth.
Mm-hmm.
The whole universe of Earth, where Earth is at.
But to be fair, I'm cool they didn't show up, because he's busy. He's kind of the Elminster of the MCU. He's got a whole Dormammu and other people at bay, so he hasn't got time to worry about little town called Westview that Wanda's screwing around with. And I watched the WandaVision and enjoyed it. It was a little superwoman power everywhere you turned. Got a little annoying, but maybe a lot annoying. But I did enjoy the show overall. I'm just starting to get my fill of it. Their comments they make are just starting to... I'm reaching my limit. Just tell a good story and shut up.
Yeah. I mean, I'm hoping for some studios to pop up. I know there was talk. I can't remember the guy's name, but I can't even remember what podcast I listened to it on. But there is a fellow in the in Hollywood who's a conservative. And I don't care if you're conservative.
Not really.
Or whatever. As long as you're just telling good stories and you don't bring all this social crap into it.
Yeah, exactly.
Just tell good stories. And he's trying to get a competitor to Hollywood or Netflix or both worked out. He's got some. It's not just him by himself.
Yeah. I think I've heard of this guy.
He was talking about that. Yeah. And I wish I could remember all the details, but it sounded nice.
I wish him nothing but success.
Yeah.
Anything to compete with Disney and the left. Okay, let's talk about. Now, it's funny. I didn't do this on purpose. I didn't choose Ravenloft as a setting because I found this. I already had chosen Ravenloft as a setting, and then I found a couple of sweet little comments to really piss me off.
Before you get to that.
Mm-hmm.
Eric July.
Yes.
For canon's sake.
Yes.
YouTube. Watch it.
Absolutely. He is spot on. And his comic book comments are great. And he's going to be doing his own comic book soon. I'm going to be supporting him for that because I don't care what it is. I want to support somebody that makes sense.
Right.
So anyway, Ravenloft then. Are we ready for that?
Yes.
Well, coming out soon is Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft for 5e. Not buying it. Don't care. Mm-hmm. But there was a comment. I don't know when it was. Ravenloft. I call it the domain of wokeness now. Mm-hmm. Apparently Strahd's bisexual now. And Jeremy Crawford confirmed that he's got a male consort, supposedly in Curse of Strahd, which I'm going to be combing through that with a fine tooth comb to see if that's actually true. And look, what are you doing? Can you just leave some characters alone? The dude was madly in love with Tatiana, who was a woman, biological woman, forever. And now you see people online, well, what if you turn him into a man? And what if her soul was in a man's body and all this stuff? It's like, you know what? You can do it at your game table if you want to, but Jeremy Crawford coming out, he has a male consort. Look, quit it. Just quit it.
Mm-hmm.
Quit trying to ram your political and social views down my throat especially the social views in these games. It's just agonizingly dumb. I got the link in there on Sage Advice where Crawford kind of confirmed that, but I want to see if that's true. I wonder if it's even true. If he's just saying that was our intention, or what did you say? Excuse me. What did you say?
Pull a Rowling where she just pulled something out of her anal canal.
Yeah. All of a sudden, what's his name? Not Dumbledore.
Dumbledore. Dumbledore. Yeah. No, he wasn't.
Ooh, look, I just got some points from that.
Yeah, she just wanted points.
NNLLIVT community, whatever LGB.
The only way she could really, okay, it's possible. Though it wasn't discussed in any of the novels, I read all of them, and the only thing that was kind of hinted at in the movies was he was a little flamboyant.
Okay, yeah,
but
not like
you don't have to be gay to be flamboyant.
Yeah, what's the word they use a lot of time? The old one I guess would be bad now. Flaming would be a flamer.
Yeah, but he wasn't like that. He just had eccentric way of dressing.
I mean, this is nothing more in my mind. Crawford doing that's the same as Iceman being gay.
Yeah.
You're just trying to abscond with already settled characters. And I get Strahd's a villain. And I'm not saying Strahd would pretend to be, or even he might be bisexual, but I don't care. Don't. It's not a thing that I need to care about.
All the vampires are these days.
Vampires are just monsters, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And yes, as a human, he loved Tatiana, but now he wants to possess her. And that's what he's all focused on. He's not focused on other people. I don't care if it's men or women, but there's some comment about he's fascinated by beauty and blah, blah, blah. And then that website, that Sage Advice article, some guy wrote in, he goes, is Strahd bisexual? And Jeremy Crawford goes, yeah, you got it. He's got a male consort. So I'm going
to
find it.
The guy said, good. I want my villains to be bisexual too.
Yeah, because it's so important that a villain's sexuality is discussed. Yeah. And so anyway, and then we're rolling on to Wes Schneider, who's the lead designer on this Van Richten's Guide to Ravenloft, which is their answer to the Domains of Dreadbox set for 5e. And he's full of crap too. He's talking about they're redoing the domain he talked about was Harakir, which is a domain with like mummies and stuff. And his claim was, and this just came from the second edition module, Touch of Death, which I owned. And he does seem to say, well, we're going to be ignoring the tropes, because D&D was so questionable about the way they handled different things like the Vistani and stuff. Well, look, I got news for you. If you look at the definition of a Vistani, of a gypsy, they're from the Roma culture. They got a variety of different ones. Let me find real quick, because I did. And let's see, where does that come up? Here we go. The definition. I wanted to read it. A member of a people originating in South Asia and traditionally having an itinerant way of life, meaning traveling, living widely dispersed across Europe and North and South America and speaking a language. So they're all over the place. Romani, that is related to Hindi, a Romani person, a nomadic or free spirited person. Okay, so that word is bad to use. A nomadic or free spirited person. Oh my gosh, heaven forbid you call me a nomadic or free spirited person when I don't know, I'm nomadic and I'm free spirited, or at least that seems to be the case. My point is, it's not what they say it is. Their crap about saying the Vistani is some kind of like cultural appropriation or they're being negative toward them, I don't buy it for a second. And I just think, his comments are just so, well, they're just very indicative of how role-playing games are going, especially D&D now. They're just slapping up all the woke crap.
If an American-based company does makes a gaming product that has things in it that are not purely European, then they become problematic to these people.
Whatever.
So it's the imaginary cultural appropriation nonsense that they come up with, which isn't real. We all borrow things from various cultures that we like. I love Mexican culture. I love Native American culture. I love Asian culture. I love European culture. I love lots of things about those different cultures.
Parts of all that, yeah.
Parts. I mean, there's parts of those cultures I don't pay attention to, but there's lots of it that I like. And if I decide I want to wear Oriental Chinese attire and take a picture of me in it and put it on social media, then I don't want anybody to bother me about it.
I don't care what they say.
Don't care what they say.
Don't care. And you know, like, and I went back, Joe, in particular, I read Touch of Death again, or the highlights of it. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. It's about a young Vistani and her brother, and she has these super cool mistraveling gifts like her now deceased mother. It involves Sinmet, who is a bad guy, a sort of a greater mummy. He deceives another evil chick, a priestess of Set, to help him do his bidding. He's trying to take over the domain from the Dark Lord Ankhotep. He's one of the Dark Lords of Ravenloft. And he kind of pretends he's controlled by her, but really he's manipulating her to do the things he wants. And if it does play like a high adventure, if it does play off like a Boris Karloff mummy thing, maybe. But the truth is, there is no, as you asked me, there's no European wrapped in cloth with a little fez on his head that shows, you know, it's some kind of European centric view. It's definitely got a cool Egyptian vibe. It looks awesome. Great dungeon maps, cool story. Two females that are key in the whole story, you know, and then
that's the thing about D&D from the beginning. Mm-hmm. It's never been exclusive.
No,
it's a big lie. It's always been inclusive. When inclusive was a good thing. This reminds me again of, and I keep forgetting to do this, there was a YouTube video we watched years ago that was one that caused a rift or was showed some cracks with some folks that we used to hang out with. Where this college person, I don't know if they were a professor yet. They were doing their, I think they were doing their PhD dissertation. And it involved the history of D&D and how people play and race, its inherent racist biases. That's his whole, he went into it already thinking that.
Yes.
And so you open the chainmail rules, maybe. Or the earliest books were black and white. You know, line drawing. And he was saying that they're all white. It's all white people in there.
Not true.
They're just, it's white paper. And line drawings. And you if you look at the images, they're drawn with ethnic features. So you didn't have a,
and a turban on one guy, page two or three.
It didn't look like a European with a turban on.
No, it did not.
So, and we got in an argument with one of our former friends. And he was like, yeah, he's white. I'm like, you're stupid. That's a line drawing on white paper. That's not a white person.
And it might be a crappy drawing, but it's clearly not meant to be a white person.
And you know what? There were lots of different cultures represented in those, in that book. For the short book that it was, it had some females in there too. It wasn't just a bunch of white dudes.
Correct.
And this guy was trying to make it seem like it was, trying to make it seem like the game is not inclusive. When it is just bullcrap. It's bullcrap. Not the real world.
And it might have been bent toward quote unquote men because men wrote it, but it's not like they were doing it on purpose.
So a group of white guys made the game. Stop whining about who made the game. And look at how the game unfolded. Even the those folks, Gygax and Arneson, they played with all kinds of different people.
And you know this, and to me, you're bringing this is very much pertinent because this Ravenloft stuff, they talk about the tired tropes of Gothic horror. Wait a minute. Ravenloft is Gothic horror, but I guess you're changing that. And maybe they'll make the, maybe it'll be better for you, Joe. Maybe Ravenloft will be high adventure because he mentioned that. That doesn't sound like Ravenloft I know, but okay. Maybe 5e Raven will be high adventure.
They keep going to the well on the old stuff because they don't know how to do new stuff. I also get the, I heard one fellow say, well, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So you might as well use, you might as well do a new version of Ravenloft. Might as well do a new version of all these things. I kind of get that.
Fans clamor for it.
But they actually are not making new.
No.
Nothing's new. It's just retreads of old. And
well, let's make Strahd bisexual because that's cool. That's what it is. That's so their
new to them is retreading the old with the social issues of the day. So it looks new to a certain crowd.
So they can say, and, we're cleaning up the old errors of the old way.
The errors. It's an errors. Error. Yeah, it's an error. Whatever.
That's
what they do. Say. That's what they do.
They do have one new setting, the Mythic Theros setting. Seems like Greek, more like Greek legend type setting. It's one they've had for a couple of months now or a year. That looked kind of fun if you want to play high Greek style epic adventuring for 5e. I mean, it looked like kind of a cool one. But
who made that?
Wizards. They did make one setting and they did Ravnica.
That's
they
interesting.
Did, yeah. And they did Ravnica for Magic, the Ravnica setting. So they have done some new stuff and they made, you know, good attempts at it. And I've heard people that like it.
I could see Ravnica being good because there's a lot of interesting flavor text on all the Magic cards. Although they keep throwing out Magic cards because of problematic text. So I'm thinking, that Ravnica might be infested with the crap, the woke crap too.
There's, I mean, I don't have it, But I'm done buying WotC stuff. I'm not buying their crap, at least not first party. And the 5e stuff, I don't want anymore.
Right. I don't know if I'm done. This is the big difference between our side of the fence and their side of the fence. And it's not just a dichotomy. It's how we think. I'm talking about just me and Randy.
Yes.
And I'm sure there's a lot of us that think the same way.
Mm-hmm.
We're not calling for WotC to get dethroned or anything like that.
No.
We're just personally not going to participate in their shenanigans.
Correct. Yep. That's it.
Their creative direction. I'm not going to buy their stuff.
Exactly.
That's my recommendation. You can follow it or not.
Yep.
It's up to your taste. And I'm not calling for them to be unpersoned or taken off of Facebook
as they carry that
matters.
Dude, they carry the hobby, man. I really want them to do well.
I want them to succeed. I just want them to, not be woke.
I wish they wouldn't just crap on the old stuff, but what can you do?
Or not feel the need to put the wokeness in the game.
Bend the knee.
Yeah.
Oh, well, man. I think I've raged enough against the machine. Probably pissed off John and Hannah. I hope not. I still got love for them.
But I like your podcast. Keep on keeping on.
Keep on. You're welcome to your opinions, man. And Hannah. So.
Yeah, cool. Yeah.
We good?
I believe we're good.
All right. I guess we done then.
We are done. We are rant over and we will check you out. Well, no, we won't. We can't check you out. That's a rant I'm going to do right now.
Why can't
I see podcasters and video people, video recorder people, YouTubers who say, we'll see you next time.
Oh, you won't. I'll see Joe next time.
Yeah. Well, I'm not seeing any of you guys that are out on the interwebs. Man. It's weird. It's weird.
It's a weird phraseology.
So I will say, until next time, have a good one.
Yeah.